to the Power Hour on Verb Moto.
Welcome to the Verb Pod Network. This is the Power Hour. I am your host, Brad Gephardt. Welcome to another edition of the Power Hour. Excited to have you guys with us. Before I let Zach tell you all about World Mini at Mesquite, April 4th through 7th, I want to let you guys know that the hours are very running low for you to enter the Verb Edit Contest. I implore you to do so. Get those creative juices flowing. Look at some footage that has never seen the light of day with riders like Eli Tomac. Ever heard of him? Yeah, okay. What about Danger Boy Deegan? A little bit polarizing, but you've certainly heard of that guy. And you're going to get to see this footage. You're going to play with it and like kind of smush it together and come up with something amazing. Maybe it's not going to be amazing, but you'll still be able to see that footage and submit it to Verb. Hey, maybe you get a job like me working at Verb. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. With me on the line, none other than Zach Herron. Zach, welcome to the show. This being episode 8, The Power.
Wow, only like 947,000. I'll have as many as Big MX.
Yes, sir. We are celebrating almost 1,000 episodes, and I'm trying to get my 1,000th episode. I want Ricky Carmichael. I want Dude. RC. I won't stop until someone gets me that contact information. I've met RC a ton of times, but landing him for a podcast has proven difficult, although he does have his own podcast, so he's pretty busy. But I would like to make that happen. But yes, thank you for acknowledging the soon-to-be milestone for Big MX Radio. Almost 1,000 episodes, started in 2014.
Absolutely. No, that's as somebody who's tried that on their own before and then now does some other podcasts, that's no small feat. But yeah, like you said, guys, we just came back from almost 2 weeks on the road, a bunch of awesome races that we got to see. But let's talk about what's on everybody's mind, right? Because I mean, you know, motocross, we're always thinking about what's next. Right. We're not thinking about what just happened. What's next? World Minis, what's next, baby? Mesquite MX out in Las Vegas or just outside of Las Vegas. Of course, that's where it's at. That's where anybody who's everybody is going to be. That's where I'm going to be. We hope to see BG out there. We're going to do everything we can to try to make this the biggest event in the world. Yeah, you heard that right. It is World Mini and there's going to be nothing mini about it. It's going to be a ton of fun, April 4th through the 7th, out in Nevada. I've been trying to hype up my East Coasters, guys. Make the trip. First of all, Mesquite, let's talk about the facility itself. Absolutely insane, top of the line, top to bottom. I'm talking everything from the flaggers to the bathrooms, all right? Then you drop a Verb Moto, need I say more. Then you've got World Mini. The title itself will bring the competition, folks. We've got throwbacks from Jesse Nelson, Cooper Webb, Phil Nicoletti, all of these guys growing up racing out at World Mini. It's back, and we're trying to make it bigger and better than ever. So make sure you guys have got a plan to get out there to Mesquite. I had a hitchhiking path figured out, so it is possible. If you're curious, probably a little harder with a motorcycle. Nonetheless, April 4th through the 7th, I'll be out at Mesquite.
You will be there. My attendance is actually currently up in the air, although I thought that was going to be the plan. I'm waiting for my confirmation email from the powers that be over at Verb to send me down there, although I think they would want me to be there, given the number of amateur podcasts that I've done over the last year. But crazier things have happened. Also want to give a huge shout out to all of my friends over in the Pacific Northwest, as well as all of my New Yorkers out there. Verbadilla happening May 18th, 19th. Verbadilla, you take Verb Moto, you take Unadilla, you smush them together for a J-Day event. It's absolutely sick. That's where you and I first started this bromance. It started into a podcast and a bunch of other shit talking that we don't record. And it's been so much. That event was amazing. So much seat time. And they're basically doing the exact same thing, although it's not going to be a J-Day event, at Verbapalooza June 15th and 16th. At Washougal. So those are two iconic racetracks on the AMA Motocross Series. And then you also throw in Mesquite for World Mini, which happens to also play host to a couple of Loretta Lynn's qualifiers. They actually have a regional and they have an area qualifier. So if you're wanting to get familiarized with a track that's going to help you get on the pathway to the Loretta Lynn's Amateur National Championships, you're going to want to go to Mesquite. And if you happen to ride a Kawasaki, especially if it's a modern one, unlike my 2004 KX125, you are open for Kawasaki contingency, which is going to be awesome. You get a lot, you get payout for basically every class, including like 65s. I don't know who's still rides the KX65, but someone probably does. I'm talking a little bit fast right now, mainly because of this beverage here, right here. This is the First Form Blue Raspberry Energy Drink. There's way too much caffeine in here and actually zero calories. So we're going to put that down and get right into some quick banter. Let's talk about my ridiculous experience driving way too many miles, kilometers, or however unit of measurement that you want to use. I was in a vehicle for 78 hours over the course of 10 days, which is too many. Yeah, we rolled in last night around midnight. Some highlights include driving all the way to Lethbridge to meet up with Buddy. We had an awesome dinner there and then went straight down to Las Vegas where we met up with the one, the only Skip Norfolk. That's right. Jeremy McGrath's mechanic welcomed us into the Huddle Brewery. He was like, I think Skip was like determined to get me drunk, because I was the passenger at this point. So he just kept feeding me drinks. Joke's on him. I'm Canadian. Didn't faze me at all. So I just, like, he gave us a tour. That was awesome. But the very next day, Zach, we roll down to Murrieta, California.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. It's like, it's not far from Temecula. We were not exactly partying in Temecula, but we were able to be brought in. My friend Andrew Hobson, who works very closely with the powers that be over at KTM, brings us into basically what I would call the surgical ward of KTM USA. Like, the place was absolutely spotless. I literally saw Roger DeCoster working on a lathe. Like, if you've ever, like, thought to yourself, like, what is Roger DeCoster doing right now? And you've, like, theater of the minded yourself to think that he's, like, working on some sort of random part, like in a shop in KTM, he was doing that, like actually in front of my eyes. And then I proceeded to be extremely lame by waving to him.
Hey, Roger.
The glass. Yeah, okay. Hey, Roger. What's up, Roger? You've met me 9 times.
You're the man. I've
introduced myself all 9 of those times. But either way, so much fun. And then later on that day, we winged on up to Corona, California. No, we didn't stop off at Troy Lee. We went straight to Mitch Payton's office. And yeah, hung out with the guy for a better part of an hour while I bought myself a 2023 KTM 300.
Ooh, sounds like you're walking away on the big end of that deal. I mean, I did. You guys didn't see the photos that Brad sent me of the trip. I obviously being way up north there, lots of snow. Not a lot of road. We didn't see a lot of it. I was feeling bad.
You were scared just looking at the photo.
Dude, you don't
understand.
And then
it got worse.
Let me explain to our viewers here. All right. I'm from North Carolina. All right. Growing up, this is no bullshit. I once did not go to school for a week for the threat of snow. It never snowed, but damn, it looked like it.
Imminent.
And they were like, you know what, guys, we're concerned. Might not be enough milk and bread. Just stay home. And so to sit there and see feet, plural, multiple from you. And then this road that just is like, you can see it's under this like mist of spraying snow, sleet mix or whatever. I guess it is probably all just like powdery snow as cold as it is up there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was pretty terrified. We were down in Florida getting things set up for the GNCC, and I showed up I felt like I was in a better spot. I had, you know, shirt off. We're getting sun bleached, but nonetheless, I showed him and they're like, yeah, no thanks. Even the guy that's our producer, Adam Gordon from New York, he was like, I could do it, but I really have no desire to. And so, yeah, I just, when I started to feel bad for myself, you showed me your trip. So yeah,
yeah, I hate to be that one up guy. But yeah, that was, there's not too many road conditions that get a whole lot worse than what I was dealing with. I actually was super fortunate to not just pile into the back of the SUV in front of me, which it was a white SUV disguised as a white cloud of snow. Yeah, we were rolling into a town or a city called Regina, the city that rhymes with fun. And I come in hot and he hits the brakes and I just see the lights and I was like, I'm coming in hot. And it was a curved road. So I sort of was like, kind of like pulling off to the right. And had I not like quickly moved, I would have like completely slammed into the back of them. But I was able to keep her on two wheels, or I guess in that case, four wheels, and continue on. Yeah, that's right. Regina, the city that rhymes with fun.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
That's amazing.
This is right. Like, you probably, like, for those, like, those who are not going to watch the video version of this, that one had young Zach Heron in stitches.
Yeah, that was a good one. That
Regina,
one.
Saskatchewan. Go for it.
Caught me off guard.
But yeah, no, it was a fun trip. Like, I found out also that 8 hours is too long to race a dirt bike.
Yeah, it, you know, coming from the world where they do it for 3 hours at a time, I think that's probably max ever.
It should have been the Gypsy 200.
Yeah.
And 500 was too much.
Yeah. Gypsy 5 sounds good.
Honestly, I was kind of feeling jealous of the Gypsy 50 guys, the guys that are like the 50 minutes on a pit bike. Like, that would have been manageable. And also looked like a lot of fun. The track they got to ride was basically like a scaled down version of like a supercross track. Like, it actually looked sweet.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, and also all things considered, I had fun. The boys were out there. Crane was out there riding dirt bikes. Wes Williams was on a dirt bike for the first time in like 200 years. It was all very impressive and fun. And Mesquite, like I said, like there's a reason why we do like five events there every year. They're top notch. The family that owns the track are absolute salt of the earth people. They're like, literally, they had practice the Sunday after that race. Like,
wow.
The racetrack would have been absolutely hooped. And as soon as people were off that racetrack, they soaked it and ripped it. And after having 200 people, racing at any one time, like there was always at least 200 people on the track. Because it was a big track. It was about 20 minutes long. So for 8 hours, there's no less than 200 people circulating the property. It was insane. But they had practice the next morning, like 8 o'clock in the morning, practice. Let's go. Like,
yeah, the unsung heroes of Mesquite, whether it's the Shred Tour or whatever. Yeah, I mean, and that's all I've heard. And like I said, first time going out to Mesquite, coming up for World Mini. But anybody that you talk to is going to be – they say the same thing. Yeah, Mesquite is top notch. It's literally one of the best. And so, yeah, huge props to them, man. It was a lot of fun. I was following you guys on social media, checking in, seeing what was going on. Man, it looked like a good time. Looks like you guys had some.
See Wes's beard?
I did. Well, what was left of it? Yeah, it seemed like every time I clicked on Verb Story, there was a little more cut off. And so, yeah, it was. That was cool, man. You guys had some electric bikes out there as well. What was it? The founder or the CEO of Stark was out there?
CEO. That's Anton awesome. Wass.
That's
I had a
awesome,
beer with
man.
Him. Great guy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think I noticed a lot of people were commenting on that, saying it was pretty cool to see, you know, somebody that high up in one of these companies being active in it and showing that, you know, hey, this is more than just money to us. This is something we love to do.
Yeah, I was waiting for Bill Savino from Honda to roll around the corner and
careful now, big bad down. Bill. Hey, don't throw the gauntlet down. He'll show up.
Oh, he'll show up.
Yeah, I think I follow Bill too. He might have been at a parents' weekend out in Alabama. I'm not 100% sure. He was doing the dad deal. But man, a lot of racing going on my end too. Man, we had
dude. You had the most like I had a busy weekend of driving and a bunch of shit. You were at like 9 events. You were you're doing like. Pre-show stuff for GNCC and then racing over to Arena Cross, giving people high fives. You're on the floor. You're like hyping people up during the autograph signing. You're chatting with Mathis and all those guys afterwards, like just bumping elbows with Lucas Myrtle. Then you're heading over to Supercross the next day after announcing all day. Like, and then you were at the Daytona Amateur Supercross, including ATVs until what, like Thursday, Friday later on that week. Like I can't, like you're gonna walk me through it better than I can, but it literally felt like you never left a racing surface in the state of Florida for
it was
2 weeks.
So the trip it starts in Florida, but we wind up in Georgia, and I'll end it like this. The final day, the final Sunday in Georgia, I had this mother come up to me and she was nice about it, so I appreciate it. But she came up and I think the kid's
I'm tired
name
of
was
hearing your voice.
No, this kid's name was Tavin, and I called him Taven, okay? Oh. And she came up, and I very politely explained to her that I had announced approximately 76,000 names over the last week and a half. And so...
And then it's not your fault that she named her kid something weird.
Didn't want to go there with it. Yeah, there was a why, but let me just say
that.
Of course
there was.
But, yeah, anyway, Yeah. So the trip starts Thursday. Yeah. T-A-Y-V. I don't even remember. T-A-Y-V-N, I think. Yeah. It was probably running black on black numbers and backgrounds too. But anyway, thank God GNCC runs the helmet. But, yeah. So we get there Thursday. Part of my responsibilities with the team is help setting up the speakers and everything like that. So we get everything set up on Thursday. Friday, we do some media day stuff out in Palatka, Florida for the Wild Boar GNCC, which on any of my GNCC fans out there, that is one of the roughest, gnarliest races of the season. It's round two, but it's the furthest most south round. It's the deep pitted out sands. It's literally at a place called the Hogwaller. Yeah, Bo, that's what I'm talking about. It's the Hogwaller Mug Bog in the middle of nowhere in Palatka, Florida, son. What you think you're gonna get into? Trouble. So we get everything set up. We do some media summer stuff going on out there. No, that was at Daytona, and that thing was bad. All right. But leave midday on Friday, hauling ass up to Daytona International Speedway because I've got to get my credentials so that I can get into Daytona Speedway for Monday and Tuesday. I get the credentials, get a text from our boy Danny Stu over at AMA Arena Cross. Hey, man, where are you at? We're going to try to throw you on the mic some tonight. Are you kidding me? On the mic with Wes Kane, Ocean Center, Daytona.
Somebody scream.
I'm screaming. Somebody pinch me because I'm stoked. So I'm hauling a little faster than I probably should have been. I look twice for bikers. Get to the Ocean Center, man. I mean, it's probably been 2-3 years since I've been to an arena cross. It was in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is already not the biggest of the arenas that they go to, but there's just something about being in an arena, man. You got the fumes, you got the smell, you got Wes Kane on the mic, you got the lights going off, you got the Verb Moto arena cross throwback going played on the big screen in the Ocean Center. Two ugly dudes.
That was cool. One.
That was cool, man. And that kind of caught me by surprise. I literally walk out onto the start straight. I hear something playing. I turn around and it's two knuckleheads on there.
Yeah,
it's
my goofy
chatting
face.
It up.
Yep, that was the best part of that. I was rocking the mustache.
Full mustache, baby. That thing was furring all over Ocean Center. Yeah. And so we do the pit party there with Wes, get to chat it up with all the riders, everybody from Renfro to Kyle Peters. Saw Daniel Blair out there, a couple of arena cross legends. Showing faces out there. And then, of course, Jacob Hayes as well. No stranger to success in the arena cross series. He was out there with Myrtle hanging out.
Big Kyle Regal fan.
Yeah. Yeah. From what I've heard, it's mutual, but, yeah, absolutely, man. Spotting the next Jet Lawrence, the next talent that they're going to scoop up. And man, the nice thing was got to do a little bit of announcing, got to hang out. Like you said, saw Steve Mathis, back in the back room, chatting it up with, Kristen Banks and everybody like that. And then I actually got to enjoy the night show, which was fantastic. I got to hang out with Jacob.
You sit with Stu Baylor on top of that. That guy's
well,
like just
and that's
cartoon.
What I mean. We start with Jacob Hayes, and then Jacob, he's got to go start doing his thing. So I moved down to Stu Baylor. He's got Jade and Levi, the whole family. They're hanging out. And, of course, they're cheering on Cody Groves, who, unfortunately, I haven't gotten confirmation, but I think Cody might be out. Cody had getting plowed into the wall with some shoulder injuries. So, needless to say, Stu.
Oh, I just
to
thought he
over.
Drunk hurt himself.
Well, no, then that was the problem, Stu said, was that he wasn't loose enough. He didn't have a pre-raised beer, so he was stiff. But, nonetheless,
classic.
let's button that one up. That's arena cross right there. That was only the first of a week and a half of racing. Then haul back to Palatka. Saturday, we've got ATV GNCC racing. Say what you want. The shit's badass. I don't want to hear it. Okay. It's impressive. Anyway. ATVs on Saturday, bikes all day on Sunday, legendary race. Our past title champion, Craig DeLong's bike catches on fire, literally melts to the ground during the race.
He was on fire.
I mean, yeah, the Husky was literally on fire, flames 3 foot high.
I was impressed that the graphics didn't like melt. Like they did, but they were still legible, which is a testament to whoever they use.
The entire thing was pretty crazy to see. I got over there and got to look at it up close and personal, and the story of how it got, he laid the bike over and it ignited, and then it was one of the wildest crashes. It wasn't even a crash. It was one of the wildest situations I'd ever seen. And so we get
that wrecked
up. I don't
want to speculate, but that's battery, right?
No. So, for those at home, you guys need to, I don't even know where it was at because I don't think there's been a ton of publishing over it. But unfortunately, so Craig DeLong coming through a corner, smacks into a tree, and something broke on the bike. We're not really sure what it was. I've heard a couple different speculations, but I don't want to start any rumors. So nonetheless, I'm sorry, you're going 30 miles an hour, you slam into a big tree, something's probably going to break. Well, what happens is Craig, there's team members of the teams throughout these trails. There was no Husky team members around. So Craig lays his bike over and takes off running. During a 3-hour race, folks, he's like, let me lean this thing over and bust out a quick sprint in the Garnets or whatever he's wearing. Takes off running, looking for a team member with a radio, because if the team can bring the part to where he is and fix the bike, he can continue racing. Can't find a team member, turns around, starts running back. His bike has ignited the pine straw underneath him. The pipe has lit the ground on fire and consequently caught the bike itself on fire. Huh. And the bike had proceeded to catch on fire so bad that he couldn't put it out. Like, there wasn't anything could do besides just stand there and go, oh my God. And so, nonetheless, his day was done. A huge turn in the championship events right there. That was Sunday. Sunday night, finish up with the podiums. Thank everybody for coming out. We'll see them in 1 week out in Georgia. Pack it up, grab a cold slice of pizza from the guys out in Palatka, head back to Daytona. All right. I'm playing the car soundtrack the whole way there. We come pulling in. Speed, speed. I am speed. I'm not speed, because the Daytona International Speedway staff are probably, they probably should be like max security prison guards. Like, yeah. I mean, props to what they do, but at the same time, oh my God.
Like,
first of all, who the hell decided to give them whistles? Like, look, all right, it's one thing if you're about to drown in the deep end of the pool, but when I'm walking 6 feet too far to the left to go through this fence, and that's not where you want me to go through the fence at, and you blow a whistle in my face, it doesn't set things off in the right light. So finally, true we that. Find out where we're at in the infield at Daytona. First time ever being at Daytona, ever. Actually, not a ton of bikes at this time as far as choppers and Harleys and stuff going on. So we're able to get into the speedway. Monday, we've got the best and the best in amateur supercross. I mean, crazy lap times, crazy track conditions. We thought it was going to be a mudder. It wasn't. The track crew worked absolute miracles. Great turnout, great racers. Got to work with some amazing announcers, Megawatt, Matt Watson, Mikey Waynes, of course, joining me over there from the GNCC guys. Got to meet Dean Dice as well over there from Florida. Great to work with him some. We've got the DMXS guys. I mean, it was a ton of fun. And so that's Monday. You think that's it? No, you're wrong. Yeah. All right. We saw the futures. Right? We saw what's coming next. Now it's time for a little throwback Tuesday. We got vintage racing all morning. Randy Richardson, fastest man in Piedmont. Sig is lit. Unfortunately, I think it burned him back because he wasn't able to finish throughout the day. Actually came up and joined us in the Race for TV truck, did a little race calling. So that was pretty cool. But get to see the vintage racing, Carson Brown. Newsflash, folks, doesn't matter the year, doesn't matter the color, Carson Brown hauls ass on it, okay? Wide open, so much fun to watch riding. It seriously, one of his races, I put the headset down and just stepped out of the truck just because the guy corners faster than anybody I've ever seen in my life. Then between that, we have the ATV Pro Supercross scheduled in as well. So for me, my job, whole new set of names, whole new championship to kind of catch up with. Luckily, Motormouth himself, Kevin Bailey, who has done a lot of the ATV Supercross, was there. He's retired, so he was hanging out with us, but he did kind of help catch us up on the who's who. If you got any idea what's going on, Joel Hendrick is the guy to beat on that Phoenix Racing ATV Yamaha, much like the dominant team in GNCC ATV, Bryson Neal, same team, David Eller. Same owner here. I'm seeing a lot of success coming from those guys.
Yeah.
It was an incredible day of racing. Hetrick ended up wrapping it up. Got to do interviews in Victory Lane in Daytona.
That's the coolest moment for you. I see you're in Victory Lane doing your thing. Like, that is.
Yeah, that is. I mean, you talk about history and coming from Charlotte, you know, my dad grew up racing cars. My grandparents were actually friends with the Earnhardts. And so, very, you know, a lot of personal connections to the NASCAR world. And so, I definitely was not taking it lightly where I was. And I tell you who else wasn't taking it lightly was the Daytona staff that was watching us load these muddy ATVs up onto their Victory Lane. I don't think we had even walked through the gates and they had somebody up there sweeping and mopping off where all the dirt was. And so, it was just very, very cool to be around that. Awesome to see a lot of different riders, you know, I mean, like I'm accustomed with the GMCC staff or the GNCC riding group. You've got those top amateurs, you've got the WMX, I believe that was the opening round of this brand new WMX series.
Ben Hodges.
absolutely handling business out there. Jamie Astadio as well. Sophia Phelps getting up on the box. So great job from those ladies. Awesome to get to know them and talk to them. And then, like I said, the ATV Supercross, didn't get to do any of the vintage podiums. They were kind of just a, you know, you can take pictures if you want. But I did get to catch up with a lot of those guys and talk about, you know, hey, what kind of bike are you on? This, that, and the other thing. But those ATV pro guys.
On the XR200 deal?
Just for a second. Yeah, he was coming by, hair was flowing, and right wrist was wide open, that's for sure. But it was just a ton of fun. I mean, absolute great time. We wrapped things up Tuesday night. Wednesday was kind of the only quote-unquote rest day. The TV crew and everything moved all of the Racer TV stuff that was in Palatka from Daytona over to Georgia. Hauled Wednesday afternoon out to Georgia, and then did the same show for GNCC on Monday or Saturday and Sunday. So it's been a lot of racing in various forms, an absolute mud bath out in Georgia once again. Seems to be synonymous with that. And so
did they plan for the first at least three rounds to be absolute hellacious mudders every single year?
See, here's the problem, my friend. You look at round two, and I wasn't joking when I said they don't even consider this race a mudder. The thing that is, I think, so funny is a lot of the moto crowd, they forget these tracks are 12 miles long. So you have, there are literally portions of the Georgia race where half of the track, it was raining, and the other half, it was not at all. Like, and you hear about that in some of these podiums where the riders are like, I knew I had to save my roll-off poles for this side of the track, because this is where the rain's at, and there's way more, like, it's so crazy the amount of thinking that these guys have to do throughout the course of a 3-hour suffer session.
Climbing over there.
Oh man, I'm telling you what, it is really impressive to see in person. And so, but a great general GNCC over there in Georgia. Round three is wrapped up. Johnny Girard absolutely handling business on that FMF Red Bull KTM. 3 for 3 out of the XC1 class. But Brad, I don't even know if you know this, we had history made on Sunday for GNCC. For the first time ever in the history of GNCC racing, we had an overall winner from the XC2 class. So for those of you that don't know, a little different style of racing out in GNCC, your 450 class, your 250 class, they go out in the same time. And what they do is they start approximately a minute apart. So they're lined up on those lines. Ricky Towery throws the green flag. Boom. First one goes. Clock watch starts. A minute later, boom. Flag goes again. Clock watch starts again. So there's an adjusted timing and scoring where they calculate that 60-second difference where the riders are fast enough in XC2, they can genuinely start to compete for the overall podiums, which affects the 450 points system. So the 250 guys, it doesn't really matter. But for example, the overall winner, if he's out of XC2, Johnny Girard, he won the XC1 class, but he technically gets second place points. Yep. And so a huge shakeup there. Josh Toth, the rider, getting the job done, getting it done on the Enduro Engineering machine. That is not a factory racing machine. Okay. This guy is on the General Sipes program. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Here he's doing some pro nationals later. He's done some hard Enduros this year. Guy has handled business. XC2 champion in past for GNCC. Shows up, says, I did just a week ago out in Florida. And he straight up told me, he said, I wasn't even worried about the XC2 class. I wanted this overall. Man, incredible to see a sprinter van set up, essentially one little easy up. He's got one mechanic and one other person under the tent there to help him out. And the guy handed everybody their butt out there. Incredible to see, and pretty cool to be a part of a truly historic moment in GNCC history. So that was the way I closed up my racing endeavors there for that week and a half. Just a ton of fun, man, talking to a ton of great athletes, talking with a ton of great people. Brock Glover joining us once again up in the booth, chatting with the Golden Boy. He's always just a blast, points out a ton of great stuff as well. Honestly, you take notes from him because he's Brock Glover, but even as a broadcaster, the guy really brings a lot of interesting perspectives up. So a ton of fun, and man, just really fortunate, right? I feel like that whole drive home for me was just like, man, I'm extremely lucky to get to do this, and yeah, just like I said, excited for what's next. We've got a week off this coming weekend. Maybe going to do a little throttle therapy myself. So try not to wind up, pulling a Kevin Kelly or something and winding up hurt, right? Though I think we can still talk. He's shown that one. You can still. That's how I started announcing. Was I had a broken shoulder blade, and so maybe going back to my roots. Hopefully not. I don't even want to put that out there. But then we're back at Camp Coker, and then World Mini after that. So this trip just keeps on rolling, man. Round one was February 15th, and I don't think the ride stops until the end of the year.
There you go. Yeah, you'll be rolling all the way through Loretta's and the end of the GNCC season. They'll probably they'll bring back Straight Rhythm and have you do that as well. I'm excited about it. Before we get to some listener questions, we appreciate everybody who makes their thoughts known over on the Verb Thought Line. You can submit your questions at VerbModo on Twitter, or you can just straight up email me, brad@verbmodo.com, which is actually where we get most of our submissions. Before we get to that, we got to do some site laps brought to you by Racetech Suspension and Engines. Mention Big MX Radio when you call Racetech, and you're going to save 15% on all of your parts. So if for nothing else, you want to get your suspension service, get your new oils, bushings, whatever done, do it through our friends over at Racetech, and we appreciate those guys for supporting the show.
The first site lap is brought to us Curtis via Indeed.com. There is an opening for a 30-second girl position now. You must have I believe this is shin guards for the back of your legs.
Full body armor.
Yep. And that you have to bring your own. That is not provided. It says it in the Indeed ad. You must be able to look both left and right to see if traffic is coming.
Your feet is an asset.
It is preferred, not required. Preferred. Yeah. Yep. Clearly. So, you do need at least two references on that one. So, they're cracking down. A lot of controversy over that one. I've also heard that somebody told me that there's a chance that was Vince Freeze in a skirt. He was pissed off. He hadn't put anybody in the dirt here recently. Figured out.
Yeah, the team doesn't go
creative.
Doesn't go east. He had to go out there and far be it for, like, I know Vince is a pretty light and slender guy. I think with a blonde wig on, like, I don't have great eyesight. I probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference myself. And yeah, he just gives Cooper Webb the old forearm shiver there. And actually, he like takes himself out. Really, is what, like, he didn't really affect much as far as racing goes, but. It was wild to see, and I'm just glad that the young lady, or Vince in this case, was all right, because that was horrendous. I did like the moto memes with the shopping bags.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my personal favorite. Yes.
There were a lot of, as
any, that was some low hanging fruit too.
Yes, like, as any controversy, whether it be nuts out or whatever, the meme response is just. Absolutely second to none. My hats off. Soft clap here for the memeing community. But absolutely to your point, and this is all I could think of when I saw this, was the last time I touched a pro rider or a factory rider's foot pegs. That was all I could think about, because those things are so damn sharp. It is
razors.
It is unbelievable. Yeah, they are literally like razors. And if she's backing up, I mean, as we know, it's not like she's wearing a ton. And she backs up into a full moving Star Racing
titanium
Yamaha
foot peg from Star Racing.
Oh man, I mean, like, there's a chance that her calf could have been drug across the finish line with him. Like, the potential for things to go wrong was astronomical. So for everybody to be okay, I saw the Dirt Shark interview with her. She seems to be taking it on the chin. You know, it's one of those things where, hey, it happened. It obviously was a mistake. You know, I think the fact that she's laughing about it and able to put up with it, I think that's a good thing. I also saw Kelly Louch, who is in charge of all of the Monster Girls there, said, hey, guess what? She's okay. She's not getting fired. So everybody chill out.
Lawyers.
Yeah. Mistakes do happen. Yeah. It's one of those things, but, all in all, just very glad that she's okay. And that it didn't affect the race any more than it did. I did hear Cooper said that he thought maybe over that next lap, there was a chance it could be red flag, but all in all, I think even Cooper would say that didn't affect how the race results wound up.
No, not when Jet Lawrence leads every single goddamn lap, all 23 of them. I was impressed. Before we get to talking about the races, though, we got to talk about this Verb Thought Line. We got two questions here. There was more, but we just sort of wanted to slim it down to the best two that were posed this particular weekend. So let's go to Caleb Emerson from Hidden Valley, Idaho. And this is near and dear to my heart. This is right in my wheelhouse of all things dirt bikes and entertained me as a youth.
Open up the vault. All right. We've got all the information.
Yeah, no, this is I always spill it out right here. I found the J-Law RV2, although it would have been RV51 at the
51,
time.
51. Yep. I thought the same thing.
Fight on YouTube, from their 250 days. Are there any other fights that got physical between two riders that you can think of? Anyone come up quickly for you?
Well, so I'm looking at the question, and I think the big thing that Caleb said was that got physical with two top riders like that. Because right. I think immediately everybody goes to the Vince Weston Pike incident. And while I respect both of those guys, they are not top level guys where it's like, hey, these guys are in the threat for a championship. So, man, there was a Rick Johnson flare up, wasn't there? I can't really remember. I was hoping, because when I saw the question, I was trying to think of
A little bit too far back, even for me. I don't remember Rick Johnson like tearing a strip off of anybody or wanting to actually fight someone. Ones that come to mind immediately: Ryan Hughes. He was wrestling with, I believe it was Doug Henry, 125 okay. Supercross or 125 outdoors. I don't know what track that would have been. I think it was Redbud. They got into it.
'03 was Hughes and Brownie too. Thought about that. Yeah.
Hughes and Brownie. Although that, I didn't think that got physical aside from some like bumping on the track. Like I know they got in each other's face. Yeah. Ones that actual physical altercations that were multiple with one punch, of course, Tyler Evans. He was actually teammates. It's funny because the video, they're wearing the same gear, which like as soon as they're rolling on the ground, you can't figure out which one's which. There's a iconic one between Jeff Dement he's number 77 on a KTM back in the day. I can't remember who he was tussling with, but they were not happy with each other. Rusty Holland just giving the business to, who was it? It was another like late night. It was his only ride for Pro Circuit, like literally one and done for Pro Circuit. And he gets in a fight. I think it was Michael Brandis actually. And then maybe the most iconic or the one that kind of sticks out to most people's minds in this sort of scenario is, French on French crime. When in the heat race, David Villeman comes in, like he gets knocked over or knocked out of the main rut by, Roncada, Stefan Roncada. And then the very next corner, DV comes in and just slams Roncada. And he kind of like whiskies into the tough blocks right after. It was during a heat race. And then so afterwards, Roncada kind of comes up to Villeman and to be like, what the heck? And then Villeman just goes full snap show and just like throws his bike down and just starts slapping Ron on the face. That was, I can't remember what year that was. I think that was, I want to say that's like Indy 02.
I love it. I'm a fan of it, man. I think we need more of them. I like the
Ron on a Cowie.
Yeah, I like the, like, I know we had talked about it. I like the Jet Jason incidents. Like, man, I like it. I like the fire. I know we're going to touch on this later, but I think it's just a matter of time before Deegan's involved in one.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he better be careful who that winds up being, because there's definitely certain people that I'd put my money on over him. But I mean, besides that, I'm trying to, I don't really ever remember any like straight up fights. Like I know there was some Reed and Stewart times where they got pretty close.
Grabbed him by the neck.
And then
there was one with, I think it was Jimmy Nelson and, Grant Langston. They got into it.
Okay. But besides that, I can't really think of, and as far as like top guys, I probably wouldn't really say so. I feel like, quite honestly, I feel like that fight did a lot for, like, hey, this ain't gonna fly. Like, I mean,
yeah,
those like, two and guys. Also, and it, quite honestly, I hate to say it, but I think a lot of the industry kind of is like, all right, it's Jason Anderson. We understand.
Yeah, like that. A lot of that's the Jason Anderson or Jason Lawrence effect.
Or Jason Lawrence. Yes, sorry, Anderson. Don't hate me.
Yeah, you're good. He probably hates you anyway for
he definitely listens.
But in all seriousness, like, yeah, like there's, you don't have a, like in the, within the top riders, you don't often have like a nuclear element like Jason Lawrence, who basically like those actions just aren't common among top right. riders anymore. Although some, for some reason that seems to be changing.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, we're, like I said, we're going to get to that.
Taking a look, we're going to drop down to the second one here. Josh Beidelsbacher coming out of Beckley, West Virginia. We had a GNCC there last year. Sounds like AAC9, Adam Cincirillo, is retiring. Is he the biggest amateur phenom to not win a Premier Class title? Also, is Ricky Carmichael sweating his position now?
To answer that last part, I would say no, because I think if for some reason anyone came in and took that job away from Ricky Carmichael, he's a millionaire. And
yeah, I don't think he's too worried about it.
Greatest to ever do the sport. So I don't think he would lay awake at night thinking that someone else took his job in that respect. I think he enjoys doing that job. I think he's getting better at that job. But if for some reason that was no longer his gig, I don't think he would really be sweating it. I think he's a fantastic, like the fact that we have like essentially like the Joe Montana, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan of our sport willing to get behind the microphone and talk about racing. Regardless if he's like the most talented voice that's ever done it, I just, there's, you're not going to find too many people who have more expertise and, just like, stories about winning and what it takes to win and all that fun stuff. Like there's no, like no one ever did it better than Ricky. So, like I'm willing to sort of, like his verbal crutches or anything else that people don't like. I look past those things and I just see, the guy who's on my wall twice behind me, doing just a fine job of doing play by or, color commentary. And if that was to come to an end, I don't think he'd, sweat it. But in regards to AC, retiring, I do think that that is going to be the case. He seems to be, yeah, he's kind of on a farewell tour that is not official, but is official. As far as a phenom that didn't win a premier title, it's gotta be a Lessie. Like he won a Canadian title, but that doesn't fucking count. And I'm Canadian. And so, yeah, I would have to go. It has to be a Lessie. Like the only other guy that I can think of that didn't win a big bike title that was a phenom would either be Robbie Raynard or Kevin Windham. And like Kevin Windham was as badass of an amateur as you'll find. Like that guy at that time, and same thing with Jimmy Button, as well as, Bradshaw. Bradshaw and
I was about to say, I knew a lot of people Danny were going to say Bradshaw.
Danny Stevenson. And Buddy Antunes. Like if you were told in 1985 that Denny Stevenson or not, well, Buddy Antunes will not win a premier supercross or motocross title, you'd be laughed out of the room. And ultimately he went on to have like incredible amounts of success in arena cross, but did not get it done as far as racing motocross and supercross at the premier level. So, but I would still consider him to be extremely successful. So I take Budman out of it. But yeah, those guys that I mentioned, like Bradshaw.
Yeah, I was going to say, I knew Bradshaw was pretty big. Raynard was Raynard. Another one that I didn't think
Jimmy
a lot of
Gattis.
People were going to talk
like,
about.
Gattis was like sick, but.
Yeah, I didn't even really know who Gattis was. Treadle, yeah. I'd put on there.
Yeah.
He was pretty popular. Izzy, I would say is pretty popular.
Izzy, yeah, I could say that. Izzy Stroop.
Yeah.
Like, would you Pastrana? Hear a Trey Kennard?
Yeah. Yeah.
Barsha?
I don't really know how much of a phenom those guys were. I mean, like.
Barsha was a phenom.
Yeah. Barsha
they literally released
pretty,
a dirt bike around him.
Yeah.
How many big bike titles?
I mean, Pastrana, I still think he was pretty popular.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll give
he
you
racked
that
up. And then Windham, I think, is a good example too. But yeah, I mean, and I think that's just kind of the tale of the tape. I mean, like, it's very, in a way, it's very weird. The
fact
similarities,
that,
if you want to,
Mike Alessi is going to have had more outdoor wins on a 450 and tied with Adam Cincirillo for 450 supercross wins is ridiculous.
Well, I think, and what I was about to say was how they talk about the history repeating itself. You have Ryan Villopoto, who spent majority of his childhood getting second to Mike Alessi, had this incredible professional career, and you have Cooper Webb, who spent majority of his amateur career getting second to Adam Cicerello.
Oh yeah,
have this great and no slight to
similar
to Alessi or to Cicerello. I'm a big fan of Mike. Was actually at Arena Cross doing some two-stroke racing, and yeah, so
Mike's awesome. I like
yeah, that. No. Very, very big fans of both of those guys. But it's just kind of crazy this whole the guy that you think is it coming into the season. I mean, Chase Sexton used to get his ass kicked by Austin Faulkner.
All the time.
I mean, it's kind of crazy to see the way things shift over in the pros and how some of these guys carry this chip on their shoulders. And obviously, there's been infinite numbers of reasons that things didn't work out. I mean, Cicerello has shown that I do think he had the speed. I always think he's had what it took. I think what happened was he got hurt. And I think his body just
2019
couldn't.
Monster Cup. Like he's like, it's actually wild to watch that the end of that race unfold because you're like, he 1000% has every single ounce of speed that Tomac does. Yep. And you watch him ride now. He does not have it. It's not present and he's not able to tap into that. Like whether or not like, it's just like a comfortability or whatever it happens to be, like something's holding him back. He's not quite that guy.
Yeah, I would definitely, going back to Josh's question, me personally, I'm 26 years old. Adam Cicerello was the guy that I watched. I mean, I remember going to my local track, Windy Hill. They had a regional just because that was an opportunity to see Adam Cicerello in person. And it was like he had the rig. He had the PC bikes. I still remember the first time I went to Loretta's watching him rip around on a Segway, like signing more autographs than Villopoto. And so, you know, without a doubt, the guy was pretty huge. And I think the thing that really maybe sticks out about Cicerello a lot more compared to some of the other riders is the exposure aspect. Like you had Alessi and you had, you know, Izzy and those guys. They were in your mini warrior era where mm-hmm.
they were still traditional media.
Yeah. And Cicerello, man, I remember like looking him up on YouTube and he's on a KX85 riding at Ricky Carmichael's house. And I just thought it was
still Herb's top video.
Yeah, I don't blame him, man. It's a badass video. And so I think just that level of exposure was kind of brand new to the world where it was like, hey, here's a different video every Saturday night as to what Adam Cicerello is doing. And so, yeah, it'll be sad to see him step away, man. Like I said, just not only just a fan of him as a rider, but his mentality and the way he's gone about being an ambassador for the sport. I can't say enough good stuff about him. And I said it on one of the earlier episodes. I'll say it again. It is my goal to announce a pro race with Adam Cicerello, whether it be outdoors, supercross, I want to make it happen. So, no, man, I wish him all the best. I'm bummed to see him hanging up, but I also am, there's a certain level of like, hey man, that's pretty cool that he's at this point and he's, you know, ready to move on to the next chapter. So,
yeah. And you might end up getting to announce him if he comes back like plus 25 class, like why not?
Hey man, no, I don't want to announce him. I want to announce with him.
He's sitting next to me in
the building. No, trust me. I've spent enough time saying Adam Cicerello's hauling ass. I was 14, but I was still announcing that regional.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So it was.
I like that. Let's talk Supercross. We're gonna have to sort of blanket this reaction, like the Daytona and Birmingham, but given the fact how far back in the rearview mirror Daytona is, let's jump straight into some 250 talking about the Deegs and his propensity to have issue with his competitors and for the most part come off as very emotional. I don't quite understand it seems like a very emotional young man.
Yep.
Who, when things go sideways, he lets a lot of that emotion out. I don't like Seth Hamaker, maybe a little bit more cool, calm, and collected than I am.
I'll just say this,
Zach, if we got entangled in a first horn pileup and I couldn't get my bike free, and then you toss my bike to the ground, I would toss you to the ground.
Well, I'm telling you what, it's a good thing Seth was having conversations with the two birds sitting on his shoulder after thumping his dome off of the ground. Uh-huh. Otherwise, I think you probably would have seen a different reaction. You know, and I don't think either one of us are Deegan haters. And so, you know, all the the Deeganettes or whatever they are, bring the comments on, because I'm not a Deegan hater in the aspect of as a writer. No. But dude, it's first of all, if I'm the team, I'm telling him, hey, brother, you got to get this under control immediately. Like, because A, you've painted a target on your back. I mean, first of all, just the flipping off of Vial earlier in the season, I guess, can be written off to a misunderstanding as to what he thought
it's
happened in that turn
grab.
But it was still absolutely, it was unnecessary. It didn't do anything other than quite honestly slow him down, because he had to stop to flip off Vial.
Yeah, he made himself look like a baby,
a dick. And so, and then you go, and I mean, everybody's got their opinions. I understand cutting across on the start, but the fact that every time I rewatch that start, he doesn't come into frame until the last half a second. Like, sorry, buddy. Last time I checked, every one of those guys is going for the whole shot. They're not saying, oh, I'm going to go as fast as I can until I see Deegan. And so it was a huge crash for Hamaker. I mean, the way he thumped the back of his head.
Oh, yeah.
That could have been the season right there. But
especially with the concussion issues he's had.
Yeah, you're spending more time yelling at Hamaker than trying to help the track worker get the bikes apart. You get the bikes apart, and you think it's a good idea, never knowing your future. Who all knows? Bobby Reagan may tell him to kick rocks next year. I doubt it, but, you know, whatever. And you're going to push over the next top team's bike like it's a piece of trash. Like, I mean, just classless. That's the only thing I have to say about it. Classless,
no, it's...
and it's immature. Like you said, I don't care how emotional you are. You're a professional now, buddy. That is not an excuse. I don't care. You gotta suck it up. And I mean, it rubbed me the wrong way, man. And I think his attitude of this is my sport and everybody just needs to accept that I'm here. Man, it's taking the potential for real fans to be like, hey, this kid had a lot of hype and he's living up to it. And it's like, man, who is this pompous prick, quite honestly? Like, I'm sorry. You cannot.
Yeah, no,
treat
I completely agree
like
with
that.
You. It comes off as so entitled and bratty and like, I can do whatever I want. And yeah, like, you know what? The guy has skill. He's like,
yes, that's what I mean. He's talented
enough.
One of
the fastest 250 riders in the world right now. I won't take that away from him. But the way he carries himself off the bike, the way he shows very little respect to his fellow racers and stuff like that, like, that's only going to bite you in the ass. And yeah, like, you try that same thing with Jason Anderson. Good luck.
Well, yeah. And that's what I mean. He better get it out of his system in a hurry, because first of all,
what do you think Tomac would do?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. You go over and then you do all that, and then you go over to the tent afterwards. Like, that to me tells me he doesn't think he did anything wrong. Shove that guy's bike onto the ground as he's trying to get back onto it. Like, it's not a good look on his part, man. I don't know what the team or Brian or any of those are saying to him, but, you know, and I've said it before, I think Deegan is the perfect guy to play the villain, right? But it's like, dude, you don't have to be like a jerk. Like, the beauty of it is, it's like, you don't like this guy, but you can like this guy. Whereas, you know, at the end of the day, motocross and the fans, man, I do consider us to be a group of people with principles. And it's like, at the end of the day, we value the sport for what it is. It's a sport. It's sportsmanship. Freddie Norin's getting praised for picking
he's
a bike up off
of
Justin
entries.
Hill. Yeah, exactly. But this is the complete opposite, man. Hamaker was, I mean, I'm going to say it, Hamaker was hurt. And then you just toss his bike on the ground like that. It's unnecessary twice in a row now. The comments on the podium about Faulkner, I think, still have a lot of people peeved off. It's just like, dude, you're checking a little too many boxes too quick, man. Like,
we're talking about a guy who, he gets a win. After his very first win, he's like, oh, like, this class is full of guys that aren't consistent.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Sorry, what?
Like,
yeah.
Is that his only podium this year?
Yeah, it's just like, man, I know there's hype, and I know that, you know, you've got this team around you, and that, quite honestly, he has to have a level of confidence that I don't think a lot of the other riders can touch, just from the financial standpoint. Like, dude, if you think about the amount of money his YouTube is making, like, he doesn't have the financial necessities that a lot of the other riders do. There is already a career.
There's no consequences for him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I hate to say it, but ultimately, Hayden Deegan could lose his ride and not be picked up by anybody else again and still have more money than most riders ever do. Yes. Yeah. And so it's frustrating in that point because, like, how do you discipline or how do you get back to somebody like that? But at the same time, it's like, you know, the AMA, I don't know. There's got to be a amount of infractions that you can get before something happens. I know they fine them, you know, $1,000, which is like a quarter to us. And, you know, and then he had the positions for the off-track excursion. But, yeah, it's not a good look, man. Like, I really want to be about this dude, and I want to be pumped for him, and I want to be like, man, you know, I want that unfilteredness to be a good thing. I want him to say what he's thinking, and I want him to say what's going on with the bike, and I want him to be raw with us. But it's like, dude, you got to have more respect for the other people out there doing battle with you.
I'll say this. I love the aggression. I love his riding style. I love the fitness that comes with the speed and everything else like that. He digs like very few others anywhere near his age group. He has that fire to push, and it's so inspiring. But if with all this other stuff around it, I can't, like, I'm out. Like, that is, like, it's super disrespectful. It is, and it honestly, it makes him look like an absolute baby. And yeah, I'm really not impressed with that stuff. I'm so impressed with the stuff that I see on the bike, where he's pushing the bike through rhythm sections, and he's hauling around corners, and he's launching it at Ironman and this, that, and the other thing. Very impressive, but all the other stuff, really not impressed with. Like, and honestly, he doesn't give a shit about what I have to say about it. I'm sure he really doesn't. But regardless, like, my take on it is that he's really hurting his own stock as far as being able to connect with more fans. And yeah, maybe a certain segment really, really like the guy because, like, he kind of embodies that. But I think you don't do yourself any favors by disrespecting others. And the industry is too small to really kind of just be pissing people off left, right, and center.
Well, and that's what I mean. Obviously, there's popularity, there's hype, and that only gets you so far. Eventually, you know, if this type of stuff continues, I do think it becomes a problem. But all in all, man, it's you know, I guess it's kind of part of the danger zone that we knew we were getting sold. I tell you what, I will say I'm a fan of, man, is the quiet hustler, right? And sure, there's a little bit of a language barrier there, but I've got it on the show notes, man. The number 16 officially adds enough horsepower. I don't know how much it needed, but yeah, whatever it was, man, I'm on board with Vial. I'll say it. I like the guy's style. I like the way he carries himself. And I think the confidence that he's got now, look out. I'm telling you, it is very, Mouskans, just that typical French silky smoothness where the guy just seems like he's effortlessly floating around the track. And
it's a starts for me.
Well, and that's what I was just about to say, man. How do you argue that? Like, I mean, quite honestly, same thing we're saying with Jet. Like, what are you supposed to say when a guy that you know can get it to the finish is immediately in front of you? Like, it's hard to do anything with that. So, and he's very quiet, very humble. Just executing like he needs to be. And I mean, props to KTM too, because I mean, there was a lot of questions circulating that 250 and their entire effort there coming into this. And man, he's answered that.
That team had, or that motorcycle, of course, Huskies had won and Gas had won, but KTM had not won a Supercross since Shane McElrath in 2000. And I want to say that was 2019. Which is redonkulous, especially for how much success that team has had. But yeah, like, I don't want to just, like, lump them in with Mouskan, but, like, show me where they're different.
Yeah.
And I'll concede to that. Like, okay, maybe, Marv wasn't as good at starts, but, like, they're both skinny as a rail. They have great style on a bike, super humble. They say the right things. They race like no tomorrow, and they're better outdoors than in. But he's fixing that.
Well, and they're just nice too. I mean, say what you will, like it's this nice, hey, I'm happy to be here. I'm, you know, enjoying this. Like, I like that, man. I like riders that like the sport. And so it's cool for me to see. I didn't, like, obviously I knew who he was, but it's like, as he's been around more and I see more stuff about him, like, I like him more and more.
The guy who rips full shots in MXGP.
Well, and that's what I like. It's like I knew the guy was impressive. I had watched some of the Red Bull documentary stuff that they've done with Prado and Caroli and those guys over there. And so I knew that the guy had skill, and I remember him in, you know, MX2 coming up. But, man, the way it's transferred over and the way he's really seemed at home, it just yeah, I'm impressed. I like what I'm seeing, and I hope to see more of it. I want to see him fight for this title, man. I think he's the perfect good guy for the, you know, for the scenario. I think it's only a matter of time before the French versus American thing starts getting plotted and pitted out. But
those sparks are gonna fly.
Well, I've already seen. We talked about Moto memes. It was Ricky Bobby and John Girard, yeah. And they're like right here in each other's face, and it was Vial and Deegan at the next race. It was what the meme said. It just,
you could just say you like really thin pancakes.
I'm going to quote the late, great Colonel Sanders and say, I'm too drunk to taste this chicken.
Like, are crepes those really thin pancakes? You just like, you roll them up. Like, yeah, it's a crepe Suzette. It's delicious. It's like, yeah, nope,
I'm already too far. He's got to break my arm. My name's Hayden Deegan. If you don't chew Big Red, then fuck you.
Yeah, 100%. I do like Big Red.
I do too. Yeah, absolutely.
You want to talk about Romano or before we go into the 450s or what are we doing?
Yeah, man. I mean, not really too much to say. Obviously, he had a little bit of that get off, but I just feel like he's starting to get his groove back. You know, yeah, I think
you're
there was
a Nick Romano fan. I get it.
Well, and there was a lot of question marks around him. I still think he's got, you know, stuff to prove. But if nothing else, for me, I like to see a good comeback from an injury. I always like to see like a little bit of a. It's got to give those riders that little bit of, okay, I've got at least one performance where I can say like, hey, I've still got this. And so, I think it's a nice little base layer to build off of. So just wanted to give him some love. I know he's listening, you know, paying attention, been waiting for us to talk about him. So,
on the power hour, we know
but,
that,
and quite honestly, I just wanted to come up with something else to say before we started talking about how Jet is just beating the shit out of
everyone,
because it's not really fun.
He's
got to
be over 100 laps led for the season though.
Gotta be. I mean, it is
back to back wins.
Dude, like there needs to be a pact between the rest of the top 10 on whoever lines up on each side of Jet just fucking sacrifices their start. Like,
I guess
they just got to fucking pinch him off, man, because it is. And that's what I mean.
You got to get in front of them first.
Yeah. The starts and the heats are one thing, but man, the pressure's on. That guy comes out of the gate like Ricky Bobby, man. I mean, he is just hauling and same thing with, like we said, with Vial. How do you beat the guy when he's already winning in the first turn? Like, and you know at this point, when these guys see, maybe not Cooper or Eli, but you know when they see the big 18 in front, they all go, ah. Because it's just like, dude, your entire race just got arguably impossibly difficult. Like, and I think that creeping thought starts to go deeper and deeper into the heads of Cooper and of Eli, because it's like, man, when he gets in front of me off the start, I can't run him down right now. And so, yeah, I don't know. I know we've got Tomac, you know.
He's got to be officially out at this point, right?
He's out of it. Yeah.
There's 26 points down. Like at this point, like he literally needs help. Like he needs Jet to like throw a chain or like break a collarbone. He needs the same thing that Chase Sexton got last year with having like your main competitor not continue to race. Like, Jet Lawrence is just that good right now. Like there's no two ways about it. He is the fastest in the class. He's more often than not the fastest qualifier. It's not even fair. Like he's putting the boots to, like, I think it's funny how, we talk about the most stacked field ever. And like, if we had those two races that were mutters that he struggled at, if those were dry races, I think we're talking about a series that is even more lopsided, with he could be at 6 wins already. And like, yeah, knocking on the door of history. It's incredible to watch.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's almost boring to talk about at this point, because it's just somebody's got to figure out a way to beat Jet Lawrence, period. Yeah. That's the 450 discussion, because there's nothing else to say. So, man, let's wrap it up, man. We've covered a lot of racing, covered a lot of stuff.
Sir.
We can't go without the vented plate, let it out, vent session.
Let it all out.
We got a lot of pimped up aggression and anger. I'm going to start this thing off because I'm not going to name any names, even though I really would like to, because it's this one rider in particular does this a lot. If you make it up on the podium, and the, for me, I'm personally talking here about GNCC, because we do podiums for multiple different classes. And, if you don't get a first in your class, man, take the trophy, take the plaque with you when you go. I mean, first of all, don't leave it on the stage so I have to come back and clean it up. I didn't sign up for that. I don't get paid any extra for that. And no. Take it to the scrapyard. I get
been lifting for you. You're pretty weak.
Yeah, exactly. And so I need to get on that first form program. But nonetheless, it just, I don't know, man. It just rubs me the wrong way. I know it rubs some of the other staff the wrong way, because it's like, man, there are people that are busting their ass with the dream of one day being able, for some reason, to talk to me up on that podium, you know? And that's part of the reason I take my job so serious, is I'm like, man, this is a huge accomplishment, no matter the class, for these people to be up there. And then when you have other riders, and it's like, you know, especially when it's like second, because that guy in third, he'd probably slap your mom in the fan, in the stands right there, just so he could get that second place spot. But you're sitting there, you're tossing the plaque on the ground. You won't even put the medal on. I don't like it, man. I know we all want to win. I know that's the goal, but you need to celebrate, especially when you make it on the podium.
You need to be gracious in defeat. And,
you need to be grateful. I don't think it's a good look for your team, for your sponsors. And quite honestly, you can go back and watch my interview. You can probably tell who it is I'm talking about, because my interviews change. I'll be the first to admit, I don't like it. It rubs me the wrong way. And it's like, you know, at this point, I just don't want you to get any gold medals. And so that's my vent session, man. If you're lucky enough to get an award, to get up on the podium, take advantage of it, man. Thank the people that got you there. Say how you're going to win the next time. Talk to me about it, man. I'll help you out. I'll make it sound good.
Take a page out of Cameron McAdoo's book. The last 3 weeks, he's had unbelievable exchanges. He's like, he's playing up to the fans. He's thanking Mitch.
That's what I've got to say, man. Make the most out of your opportunities on the podium. Celebrate the little wins, man, because I guarantee you, third's better than fourth. Seconds is better than third. And there's only one guy that can walk away with first. So you got to take what you can get. That's it for me, man. What do you got? What are you venting on?
I'm venting on this. Is this like, I see it in other sports. I think we're maybe more guilty of it than others. Although, like, I see these like just cherry picking stats when it comes to promoting the sport. And it's like, it's Jet Lawrence through 9 rounds compared to McGrath, Dungey, and Reed. First of all, Reed didn't even win that championship. So, like, no offense to Mr. Reed. Why is he in there? Like, every single one of these seasons is different. And like, there's different sort of scenarios that are playing out, guys that are leaving the series. Guy, like, when I think of the 2010 series, like, that was an influx year for Ryan Villopoto. He broke his leg. Chad Reed was dealing with Epstein-Barr. James Stewart was off the rails. Like, you were dealing with a Davey Millsaps that was riding a very ill-handling Yamaha for the very first year. It was just if you want to talk about just specifically Ryan Dungey's 2010 season, like, yeah, he won the title, but he wasn't even the best guy in that series. The best guy broke his leg at St. Louis that year. And that's just how I feel about it. He was about to take the points lead.
Jeremy McGrath, and to your point though, I will say they are criminal about how much they slight Villopoto.
Oh,
that guy is
never
in a stat ever.
But at the same time, like, okay, he's unreal for a rookie, but like, Ricky Carmichael did a bunch of zero winning his first year and is still sitting, I believe now, fourth all time in Supercross wins, because James has one more, I think. And Eli is now up to, he's just over 50. So he's got sole possession of second. James is sole possession of third. And then I think it's Ricky. And then Chad right below him, with 44 wins. So are you just saying that, like, okay, yeah, it's a great rookie performance, but like, this doesn't necessarily tell the real tale of the tape? Because, like, in all seriousness, like, Dungey went in series where he had to race against Ryan Villopoto, and Ryan Villopoto raced all those rounds. It's Ryan Villopoto, however many, and Ryan Dungey zero.
Yeah,
that's all I'll say about that. And then it's like literally they showed the graphic. Jet has fewer wins than most of the guys on that list. He had the worst average finish out of guys on that list. He had the fewest points of the guys he was being compared to. I'm like, was the point to compare these guys and like to say he's not as good as these guys? Because like every, like almost every statistical category aside from total wins, he had fewer than those guys in nine rounds. I'm like it's impressive. Don't get me wrong, but like he's not even as good as the guys that you're comparing him to on this metric.
Right.
And you're also just cherry picking the first nine rounds. Like if it would have been 10 rounds and he happens to eat shit next round, I'm like, what are we talking about?
Well, and I mean, I get what the production side is trying to do, but to your point, it's just too inconsistent. And at some point, this falls on the production side of things, not recognizing that they have an educated audience. Like, I know you've got some people that, you know, they're just drinking Monster to get into the Supercross, sure, and the other thing, but a lot of your people at home, man, we're a small sport, but like, we know motocross. We may not know a whole lot else, but we know motocross. And it's, yeah, like, you know, I mean, I see it every week. Why is Villopoto never mentioned on the stats, like, ever? The guy murdered an entire era of racing, just killed him.
Back-to-back championships. Yeah. The only other guy to get that was Jeremy McGrath.
Yeah, and it's never touched on whatsoever. And I mean, to your point, yeah, it's either like they bring the stat out to just bury Jet, or it's like to just elevate Jet to God status. And it's like, man... Yeah, there just needs to be a little more consistency. And I mean, if you're trying to go back through the eras or something like that, you can't tell me that Villopoto, or you can't tell me that Dungy has an era and Villopoto doesn't. Like,
yeah, no, that was the Villopoto era.
Dungy's era was Villopoto retired,
capitalizing, yes, on Villopoto's broken legs.
Yes, yes. Like, and then
I like Ryan Dungy, nice guy, great.
No,
champion.
I do too. I think he's awesome. I mean, unreal. But at the good end of the him. Day. Yeah, it was Villopoto's world when it was the
2010 championship should have been Villopoto. He was well on his way to winning that championship. And yeah, ifs and buts, blah, blah, blah. He was a better guy. Full stop, he was a better guy. That year outdoors, like, that would have been Villopoto's second year outdoors. He has his knee fixed in 2009. He comes back, unable to race the series because he breaks his leg. He comes back the following season in 2011, smokes everybody.
Dominates.
And he tears his ACL at the end of the 2012 Supercross season and isn't able to race outdoors. Dungy crushes it again. Like, but in series where Villopoto raced all the rounds, he was, yep, like, just was. And that's, yeah. I think he still has more Supercross wins, does he not?
As far as I know, I really don't know. And I know that
he only raced was 27.
He retired early.
Seven.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about 8 months for me. You think I'm ready to retire?
Yeah. No doubt. You're coming in your own.
Yeah.
But that's just sort of my rant. That's my vent. Like, honestly, like, just don't cherry pick the stats. Like,
yeah.
Like, it just cheapens the coverage, and it makes things look kind of like you're just sort of like you're picking.
Well, you're painting history wrong. Like, at the end of the day, it's like, if you're going to compare them to past riders, that's fine. I have no problem with that, but like, do it right.
But then, like, so if you're going to do it this way, like, also show Ricky Carmichael through nine rounds,
right?
Show that through nine rounds, that guy had zero wins and he went on to dominate the sport. So really doesn't,
yep, it doesn't matter. Well, until next time, brother.
You know what I mean? Like,
I get it. It's, you know, I mean, we're sending the episode to the guys over at Supercross. So, I mean, hopefully they'll listen, you know, we'll give them our notes and we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know that they take my rants either seriously or to heart. I know that the graphic itself was created by a young man by the name of Clinton Fowler, and there is not a single person maybe more impactful on getting the sport up to sort of the stats and the numbers,
yep,
and the being able to actually boil these things down than a guy like Clinton, who has literally dug through, I'm imagining, dozens of moldy boxes of Cycle News magazines in order to actually construct the history of motocross, because it's basically undocumented up until he got his fingers on that. So shout out to Clinton Fowler, one of the biggest and most integral parts of covering the sport over the last number of years. Still didn't like that, the cherry picking of stats, but I will say that. Yeah, that's it. That's all. That's the Verb Power Hour. It was about an hour and 45 minutes. Here are two amazing interviews that I did with a couple of amazing sponsors of our podcasts. Not only Andrew Brooks from the Moto Coding Company, awesome guy, but we also have from Rev3D, Jordan Boswell. Enjoy these interviews, and thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Verb Pod Network. This has been a power.
All right, guys, it's time for our first featured interview for this particular episode of the Power Hour here on Verb Moto. None other than Andrew Brooks from Moto Coding Company. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Verb Pod Network. This is the Power Hour. I am your host, Brad Gephardt. With me on the line, a very special guest. I've been looking forward to talking to this guy all week long. We arranged this last week when he told me he was down in Arlington, Texas for the Dallas Supercross. To me, it's always the Dallas Supercross, even though the Cowboys play in Arlington, Texas. He goes by the name of Andrew Brooks from Moto Coding Company. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Hey, thank you, man.
Hey, thanks for making some time for us. You're a diehard motocross fan, supercross fan. You traveled basically across, you did like the opposite of Lewis and Clark did. You went the other way towards the center of the country to where my Dallas Cowboys lose football games and watched a pretty damn good race. Before we get into Moto Coatings and everything that you do that is spectacular and extra performance and super good, let's get to the bottom of your trip to Arlington, Texas. Did you have the family in tow, or what was the deal?
No, me and my wife are both Cowboys fans, and my buddy is in the industry. He does graphics for one of the teams out there.
Which company?
He does Dirt Bike Depot. Nice. He does graphics for him. He's HM Designs Moto.
Really?
Yeah. So you know, he got us the credentials, and we got to do the press day, and. So obviously on that day too, we're Cowboys fans. So we snuck away and did a little tour of the stadium.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I've definitely I was like,
I'd rather go see somebody win in that stadium than go watch the Cowboys, you know?
No kidding. Yeah. No, those guys break my heart on a weekly basis.
Every year.
Annually. I'm sure you're not as much of a hockey fan as I am, but they are the Toronto Maple Leafs of football.
They have an
unreal team year after year. They got like the lead the league in jersey sales. They got all the primetime games, and they will rip your heart out and stomp on it come the playoff time. Of course, yeah, the Green Bay Packers beating us our lunch in primetime in front of millions and millions of people. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about Moto Coatings and how you've turned that into a brand that is sort of transcending the medium itself, like the your ability to have quality work time and time again, and you showcase work from motocross bikes all the way to Harley Davidson's. You've even had some stuff featured in some magazines. Let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah, it started about 2021. I was going to do an 01 YZ125 build, and I was looking to do some Cerakote work, some vapor honing work, and you know, I couldn't find anyone locally, or nothing was really easy to get done, right? So I started looking into it myself, and I ended up buying some stuff and started trying it out and working with it and started getting some attention with it. So I said, you know, I'm going to start doing this for other people, which in turn made my bike build 3 years long. But it's been fun. It's been a learning process, and get to see some really cool results at the end, though.
No doubt. No, it's being someone from the trades myself, of a journeyman bricklayer, as I grew up into adulthood, and that's essentially what I did that funded Big MX Radio until eventually I landed here at Verb. Being able to work with your hands and be able to step back from something and say, I built that, is a really cool thing. And for you, you did a very entrepreneurial thing, and that is basically having a problem or identifying a problem and going ahead and solving it on your own. You've done exactly that with the Moto Coatings, and it's always a learning process along the way. I'm sure there's been some mistakes that have been made. The learning curve is rather steep with that sort of stuff. But it sounds like you've also been kind to yourself and let yourself make those mistakes, rectify those mistakes. And obviously, if you ever did make a mistake with somebody's work, just completely redo it and start from scratch. And that's essentially the integrity that stands behind Moto Coatings Company. So, yeah, you're off to a great start with that.
Yeah. I mean, if you can start something and never fail, are you doing it right? Are you even really trying? You're going to fail in anything you do, right? You're going to fail in anything you do. And it just depends on, you know, how you make those mistakes and how you correct them defines kind of what you're going to do and how you're going to do it.
Certainly. So, what made you, like, obviously you wanted to do your own bike build, but, like, how soon after sort of starting to acquire some of the skills and the equipment to be able to do this work that someone started to kind of like knock on your door and say, hey, can you do that for me? And I'm sure that's sort of why, much like the bricks on my dad's house, your bike took 3 years, like the bricks on his house took about 6 years to get done.
Yeah, it started out, you know, my stepdad owns a business, so I go down there and use his blaster. Obviously started out not even using the right media. Now everything's done by the book, but for my own stuff and learning how to do it, I would go down to his shop, you know, use his equipment, come back home, finish it at home. And it took about a year. I ended up getting my own equipment, you know, just starting out. But as soon as I got some parts done, people were like, whoa, hey, you know, when can we do mine? You know, so it happened pretty quick, which drove me into getting my own equipment. And we're still growing today. I just ordered a bigger oven, bigger honer last week. So that should be getting here pretty soon. Just be able to offer more and get it done a little bit faster.
Isn't it incredible how, like, so many times, very, very similar to even, like, this podcast or a lot of businesses that I've talked to in the past, they all start from humble beginnings, and then as you start to ramp up, then you also get, like, it's called gas. It's called gear acquisition syndrome, and you just start continuing to build and build, and you have more sophisticated this or that. Like, my first podcast was done with me sitting on the edge of my bed with my laptop sitting on an ironing board because I had nothing going on. And and not to say that you were at that low of a sort of like starting point, but it seems like things are really starting to take off because of the quality of your work is just that good, right? Like I see the videos that you post on social media, and if you're not already following Moto Coatings Company on Instagram, please do so because it's visually spectacular week in, week out. And you'll keep up with all the things that Andrew's doing. But it's really cool to have seen the stuff you've been able to churn out because it seems to be like it's always clean. It's always done to like the next level of expertise, which I got to commend you on, man. That's a level that not a lot of people execute on.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And like you touched on, if I get something done and I'm not happy with it, I don't expect the customer to be happy with it. When I go pick something up, you know, typically I can find stuff wrong with it and you're like, well, what are you going to do about it, you know? Like, you know, frames powder coated or whatever it may be, someone working on your house and you're like, man, I should have just done it myself. You know what I mean? So, so that's really, that's where it comes from. I'm pretty picky. If I wouldn't want that on if I give somebody something and it's not something that I would use on my bike or I wouldn't be happy with it, we're going to work something out to get them where they're happy. You know, like I tell every customer, when you get your parts back, if there's any complaints you have, just reach out to me. You know, we'll figure it out.
That's incredible. And like, I think that sort of stems, and we had this conversation off air and you sort of mentioned that you had sort of come from some humble means. And I sort of identify with that as well. Cause I came from admittedly though, my parents weren't super well off when I was really young. My mom was a garage sale queen, as they call it. Anytime I did have something, I made sure I kept it nice and I wanted it to be the best that it could be. And I think that you share that trait as well. And then want to also be able to pass that on to your customers because you sort of expect your customers to have a similar expectation that you would. That's a powerful thing. And I guess that all starts with that CT70 you had back in the day doing wheelies up and down the back alley.
Absolutely, man. And I'm the same way. You know, I didn't really come from any money. So everything that I have, all the skills I've learned, you know, I was an electrician by trade. Now I'm moved into the inspector side of that. I do my own home remodels, you know, car repair, anything that needs to be done, you know,
at
that
point,
you have to learn how to do it. You know, you have to learn how to do it.
Right.
So I'm thankful for that, though. You know, it gives you a lot of skills in life, not only with your hands, but with dealing with people and making relationships. They go a long way.
Who instilled that that trait in you? Because there's not everyone who thinks that way. Like, if I think of like my brother-in-law, that guy puts on like work gloves to put on to unscrew a light bulb, or he might hire someone else to do it. There's a lot of people out there that are like, if I don't know how to do it, well, I'll just work and see if I can find someone that knows how to do it. You seem to have like flipped that onto the other side of that coin. That like, if I don't know how to do it, I'm gonna teach myself how to, so that next time that I come to something like this, not only do I know how to, I don't even have to source out how it could possibly get done.
Well, yeah, I'm from Central California, out in, you know, farmland, basically.
Right. Lots of almond farms out that way.
Almonds, grapes, well, a lot less grapes now, but yeah, so growing up in that kind of setting, that's what we did for fun when we were younger, man. We'd work on stuff. So that's just learning as we went. I mean, I remember, I don't know, I think my third grade science project, I did internal combustion engines, right? So
no way.
I've been working on, I've been trying to figure stuff out for a while.
No doubt. That actually reminds me, my first science fair project was how a wing works, like basically like how the science of a wing. And then I'll admit my dad helped me a lot with this one, was the science behind reinforced concrete. And I think my teacher like saw directly through that one. They were like, there's no way an 11-year-old came up with reinforced
Absolutely
concrete.
Not.
Like, yeah, the science behind a 20M bar? Really, kid?
Yeah, I did that internal combustion science project on a motorcycle I still have. It's a Z50. That's the old Honda 50 hardtail pushrod motor. It's a really cool bike. Old little balloon tires.
Yeah. Oh, those things are a total throwback.
Dude, so cool. Yeah, that's one of my next builds coming up. I want to get that one restored. And then I still have the CT70 too. Eventually I'm going to get that one back up and into its original shape or close.
Yeah, that needs to get brought back to its original luster. Now tell me about this 01 YZ125. Instantly when I think of that bike, I think of Casey Johnson, Casey Lytle, guys that raced that bike, even Ernesto Fonseca having some success on that machine. In fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Nick Way was supposed to race that bike, but he actually picked the 250F that year, which might not have been the best bike to ride that particular year. That was the first year of the four-stroke.
Yeah, I don't think that early.
Although they were good on the starts. If you watch the Nationals that year, it's basically just Yamahas up front, and then they peter their way back after with all the two-strokes ripping by them. Tell me how you came to that bike and sort of like how you sort of helped that, like, sort of shape it to what you wanted, because that was your build, you're doing it like that wasn't a client's build, that came directly out of your mind.
Yeah, so that one actually came from one of my best friends growing up and still to this day. He rode it a lot when we were younger. We all used to race, and he'd ride that on the weekends on our motocross track, and it blew up. You know, the cylinder was gone. Mm-hmm.
As 125s do.
Yeah. And it sat in a shed for a long time. And finally, I reached out to him. I'm like, hey, what are you going to do with that 125? If you're going to get rid of it, let me know. So I ended up getting it from him and just stripped it down, split the cases, just full rebuild, every bearing, every seal. Fully, bike has been fully gone through. And then, you know, you talk about 125, you don't talk about suspension, right? So I went in and put those Race Tech gold valves in it and sprung it, and man,
hell yeah.
What a difference.
I'm shipping this to you, by the way. This is coming to you, like, I have the code covered up for those who might actually pause the video and check. I'm sending this to you.
All right,
for a set of gold valves from my buddy Checkers. Tell me a little bit more about these gold valves, because like, I love this. You got a 125 set up just for you with plushness and bottoming resistance.
Yeah, so it's the first bike that I've set up for my weight, my riding style. And, you know, the last bike I bought new was in 14. It was a 15 Yamaha 450. And then in 06, I got a YZ250F. Which that was the first year of the SSS suspension, which it worked okay. Rode that bike a lot, did a lot of races on it, completely stock. I think I had an exhaust. That was it. But hands down, this 01 with that suspension has been the most comfortable, most forgiving, best feeling suspension I've rode on personally. Like I said, I've only rode stock. So, yeah, what a world of difference.
When I think of that bike, it's actually unbelievable that it never really won. Well, it won one championship. I suppose that would have been 125 East with Ernesto Fonseca, but it, like, that bike didn't do nearly as much winning as it probably should have, because Pastrana was on the Suzuki. You had the Pro Circuit guys that were killing it. You had a few of the guys, like, guys on Hondas that were doing really well at the time. But yeah, that, like, there's like that, how great that bike is was kind of lost on the fact that there were some really talented riders on other machines that sort of overshadowed it. But that was a great bike. And, like, for those who don't, haven't already followed, like, please go follow, Moto Cody Company on Instagram. There's tons of photos. I think you have that one pinned, correct? If not, it's close to the top.
Not yet. I might go pin it now.
I think you should pin it. I think that okay. Should be your flagship, for sure. That should be, are you going to keep that bike for basically as long as you run the business? Like, I know, like, I've never sold them. I got them all. You can't get them out of my cold dead hands. But what's your take on that?
Yeah, that one's never going anywhere. I have too much time, and that's a, you know, $10,000 125, you know, from 01.
Ain't nobody so give you 10 grand for either.
No, you know, that's what I started doing this stuff with. So that's not going anywhere. And it came from, like I said, a best friend. So that's another reason it's not going anywhere. Yeah, no, that one will stick around. When I first finished it, I thought about draining the fluid and setting it here in my office, but I was like, man, I got to ride this thing.
Oh, no, they're meant to be ridden. I got an 04 KX125. She's beautiful. She's the first big bike I ever owned. And like you said, like, at most, if I had it all cleaned up and fresh this or that, someone might give me $4,000 for it. But, and like, I'd never be able to find a nice,
clean. That's maybe.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, like, for $4,000, I'll keep it. Like, unless someone's going to, like, change my life with an offer for that thing, it's not going to happen. So, yeah, for that reason, it's going to stay in an undisclosed location so that no one breaks into my garage. It's not my garage. Yeah. But, like, seriously, I love that for you. And how often do you get out and ride it? Not nearly enough, probably.
Not enough. During the wintertime, I was hoping to ride more. It's probably been like once a month, if that. I mean, just it hasn't happened. And when I'm busy, I'm busy. You know, work comes first right now. So.
And then when you do ride, you just get arm pump immediately, because riding 125 is just like feathering the clutch nonstop, because we're big boy adults now, and like 125 cries with us on it.
It's embarrassing. A little
bit.
Yeah.
I talked to Canyon Richards yesterday. And he told me that he's 128 pounds on a 250F. I'm like, I wasn't 128 pounds on an 80. Like, that blew my mind. How like, and he's tall. He's like 5'10". So he needs to get like locked in a gym full of steaks and a barbecue, and that's about it for the next 6 months. So let's talk about some of the projects that you're currently doing. Some of the stuff that you're most proud of. What are some of the stuff that's rolled off of the showroom floor with you guys that you say, like, this is one of my most proud sort of like projects. I really liked working on it. And also, don't be afraid to shed some light on some stuff that might have caused you a few gray hairs.
Yeah, no, obviously the 125, right? That was a huge build. And then a lot of work I've done for my buddy over RKB Customs, Rick. Done some motors and some primaries for his. He does custom choppers, so I done some Harleys for him. One of them, Stardust, made Cycle Source magazine cover, which was pretty cool. Man, it, really everything I do for him, it's pretty damn cool. It's a one off, you know. One of my other buddies does some of the guys from Street Outlaws, some of the street cars. Done some work for them, really cool. Just finished. You know, fuel rails, intake manifold, throttle body, that came out really cool. And we're going to do some more work on that car, I'm thinking, here in the near future, just because of, you look at it now and the top half's like, wow, you know,
mm-hmm.
But I mean, I really take pride in anything I do. If it leaves my shop, I think it looks great.
That's killer. So like, say if I was, if I had a set of wheels and I got some stock hubs on there, or maybe, probably like some stock Kawasaki hubs, but I want to go like a magnesium brown. Is that something that we could work on?
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I would just ask that you completely strip it, take your spokes out, remove your bearings, and send it to me.
Okay, killer. Yeah, so I'm working on, I have the 04, but I want to have a separate set of wheels for it. So we're going to have like a James Stewart build, and then I can have a Pro Circuit build. And for that, I need an extra set of wheels, because you can't do a Pro Circuit set without a black set of wheels. Yeah. You have to have the magnesium hubs, because they always look cool that way. So what I need to do is go get myself a stock set of Cowie wheels, strip them down, throw them in a box, fool Canada Post by making an online shipping thing here. I make my shipping labels here, and I just say that it's like this high and like this long. And they just scan it when I deliver it.
Really?
That's how I save money. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that over here.
I've gotten away with that so many times. But yeah, I'll send it down to you. You work your magic, and then when I open the box, then my wig will be blown back. I don't need a wig, but I would have one at that time.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, exactly. No, I have a high widow's peak. That's what it is. No.
Oh, okay.
I'm retreating like the French army right now. That's cool, man. So what are some of the services that you currently provide that you're really excited about? Or what are some of the things that you're now able to do that maybe you weren't able to do when you first started the company?
So typically all the time now I'm 1 to 2 week turnaround. So quick turnaround. That's going to speed up here in the near future once my larger oven gets here. And I do vapor honing. I have a pretty small cabinet right now. That's another piece of equipment I just ordered, which goes in with my YZ250 build because I needed a vapor honer big enough to fit my frame in.
There you go.
Right?
Yep.
And I've had to turn some customers away because I didn't have a large enough unit for them for a swing arm, you know, for a subframe, whatever it may be.
Right.
So now I'm going to be able to offer that here very soon.
What is the most, put this lightly, most pain in the ass part to work with? What is the most struggle?
You know, Harley cylinders are pretty tough.
Okay.
Especially early. You're just trying to code in the fins and, you know, anything that's shaped weird, where you have weird angles, you have to try to hit everything. And I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, right? So if I can see that it's not done right, it's not going out that way. So I got to figure out how to get it done.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, I could definitely see that. Harley comes out with some pretty wild looking stuff, and they haven't changed their designs wholesale in quite some time. So they keep a very traditional look. So I could see that being more difficult. Can you give me an example of a build that you did, that like it challenged you as sort of, I could sort of think of you as a bit of a creator, like one of the ones that sort of like challenged your ability. And after you were done that project, you're actually better at what you do.
You know, the first time,
tough questions around here.
Yeah. The first time doing the shim stacks and everything on that gold valve kit, doing the install, that one challenged me a little bit at first. Obviously once I started rolling, it was pretty easy, but, you know, now I'm comfortable doing it for the most part. So that was huge. It doesn't really have to go in with the moto coating. That goes with one of my builds. So,
right.
The coating, anything you get new that has, you know, weird angles or something, it's going to be challenging. You know, you just got to tackle it.
Yeah. Okay. Great. That's awesome. Well, so aside from quick turnaround times, what do you feel sets Moto Coating Company apart from your competitors, someone that might be near you, or, hey, someone on the other side of the country? Because, people with some deep pockets, they might, like me, throw something in a box, lie about how big it is, and send it over to you.
For me, it's the customer service, for one. You know, I'll be honest with you, straightforward with you, and I keep you up to date. And two is the quality.
Key.
Yeah, and two is the quality. I take a lot of pride in what I do, and if I don't like it, it's not leaving. And if you're unhappy with it, you can hit me up, and we'll make it right somehow.
That's super cool. That just speaks to the integrity of your business, man. I love that. You're a passionate moto guy. Obviously, if you travel all the way to where God's team plays football to watch, you're obviously a huge fan of the sport. How closely do you watch on a weekly basis? You must like basically be glued to your TV every single Saturday and throughout the week as well. I always joke that people probably spend more time taking in content about the race than they actually spent watching the race, because like, heck, a 5-hour long podcast is longer than the entire broadcast of the race itself. Who do you like? What do you follow? Do you have a favorite racer? Is there someone that you would like to do some work for who currently rides and races?
Oh, any of the top guys. I mean, really anybody. Whoever wants the work done, send it my way and we'll get it handled. But it'd be really cool.
I think Celia lives near you.
Yeah, send it my way, man.
I like it.
But every Saturday Supercross is on. When Supercross is over, it's like, well, what do I do now? You know, on Saturdays, evenings. Even if I'm in the shop, I got it up on the TV, turned up loud. If I'm not watching, I'm listening. So, I pull for Roczen every week, man.
Hey, Rock.
Yeah.
Is it German?
I was in Santa Clara when he had one of his first big arm injuries.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Santa Clara.
I believe
because he got hurt Anaheim 2 2017, and then the arm injury where he got sucked in, that was San Diego.
San Diego? So maybe I was at 8-2. I was at one of them he did the arm injury.
Yeah, you must have been at 8-2. I remember watching that main event because he was challenging for second. He was chasing after Dungy. He goes basically like Indonesia, snaps his arm. You see it literally wiggling. I was like sitting in the press box, and I'm like, that's not good. I didn't even watch the end of the main event. I'm like, hey, race is over. I went straight to Honda HRC, and they just ushered him straight into the rig. The bike's all busted up. I got some great pictures of that. They were not happy with me on that one, but that's my job. And that was a crazy race. And honestly, I think that was like a huge moment in the sport as far as like what was going to happen over the next 6 years, because the way he raced those first two races, like I think he won the first race of that year, and then he got second at San Diego, which was the following weekend, and A2 was the third round of the year. And he was poised to take on the world at that time. He was like very likely to win that race. He would have been tied for the points lead, or have the points lead at that point. And at that point, Eli Tomac had 7-7 finishes. Like I was like kind of a non-factor at the time. It was kind of a pivotal moment.
Yeah, man, I pull for him. He still got it. He got back on that Suzuki and he's been ripping, dude. So
yes, sir. He's kicking it.
Yeah, but so is half the class, you know. So it's tough every weekend. But yeah, I love to see him get out there and you know, podium, win.
Like it. Yeah, he had a bit of a quiet Dallas or Arlington, well, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, he was doing good when he ran into Mookie before small table.
Mookie was spicy, though.
Dude, I was watching it, and I'm pulling for Mookie, too. Like, dude, where have you been?
Yeah, no, that was – he kind of showed up out of nowhere. Like, his whoop speed was all of a sudden there, which it really hasn't been ever since he got on the Husky. And that was good to see. Like, he was – like, heat race Mookie was back, and he was doing his thing. I don't know if Daytona favors him, but like once they get back to like the Alabama Supercross and whatnot and out east, we might have like another guy to kind of throw into the mix of like just the other like 8-9 guys that are all somehow fighting to win. Like we've got, I believe it's now 5 winners over 6-7 races.
It's the craziest season I've ever seen.
It's insane. You're
one or two guys that you know they're gonna win the championship, right? Now you don't know. Anyone could win.
Seriously, no, it's totally wild because I remember like I grew up in the time of like Carmichael and Reed, and if they were upside down with the bike dead in the first corner, they were still gonna get second.
Absolutely.
And they were I remember watching races where like Stewart would go down the first corner, and he'd either be leading or second by halfway. Like he used to do by laps instead of timed races.
Yeah,
and on lap 10, he's like in second. You're like, how? Like if Jet Lawrence went down in the first corner today, or like say at Daytona, he's coming back to like a sixth.
Yeah, after like, Dallas.
I truly believe that. He's an extra special talent, but I don't think he can like just rip through the pack the way RC and Chad could back in the day. I think after that speaks more volumes to like how good they are now versus like, yeah.
Absolutely. But you got to watch out for Tomac after Dallas, man. He's back on it.
He's got a little bit of swagger in his step now.
Yeah, you're going to Daytona?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he's the favorite this weekend.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, his name is on the residency there. He's got ownership of Daytona. He is the most winningest racer of all time there. He's won on, I believe, all three brands that he's raced there. And yeah, I can't see why he wouldn't be able to put the top step of the podium, especially if he gets a good start. And I think honestly, it was really telling because I was in the. Did you get to go to the press conference after the race?
No.
Well, Cooper Webb, he's sitting there in the middle of the podium. Obviously, he just won. And like 2 seconds into the press conference, he's like, yeah, well, we're going to Daytona next. And that's Eli's house. So like when your own competition, your teammate is saying like, this is the favorite. I tend to believe that guy, especially when you just won a race. So it'll be interesting to see.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think he's got 7 there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's absolutely insane. There's guys... Like, put you this way, a guy like David Villeman has 6 Supercross wins ever. And Eli has more at Daytona.
Yeah. Well, there for a while, Eli was hard to beat, man. And it was unfortunate what happened to him last year.
Yeah. No, that was gut-wrenching. And as soon as he didn't, when he wouldn't put his foot down, I'm like, that's an Achilles. It's gotta be. Like, he wasn't like, you could tell he didn't twist anything. I'm like, yeah, like, like with moto, you're always loading up your ankles because you basically,
yeah.
Unlike guys like you and I, like we ride on the arches of our feet. Let's be completely honest about that. but those guys ride on the balls of their feet. So they're basically just loading that thing up nonstop. And although motocross boots are like stormtrooper boots, it's just susceptible to sort of that sort of thing and things happen. Those guys put a lot of tension on it. But yeah, so how can people get in touch with you? How do they follow along and get in touch with you to possibly get some coatings done?
The best way is, like you said, Moto Coating Company Instagram. Yeah. And also on there is email, my phone number if you want to reach me. However you feel comfortable reaching out to me.
Calls, options. Carrier pigeon?
Yeah, whatever works. It's also on Facebook too, a little bit less of a following on there, but it's the same thing.
Okay. TikTok?
Yeah, there's a TikTok too.
Is there a TikTok?
There is a TikTok, yeah.
You're brave, my friend. I don't do a lot of TikToks. I scroll on that too often. I don't make too many of them. I got more of my dog than you.
I've made some, you know, with the Moto Coating Company email, and, you know, it's all set up through there, so.
Do you do all your own filming for that stuff? Because you actually do some pretty cool videos of some of your product.
Yeah, I do. I know that's something that needs work, but, you know, it's hard to make time to film whenever you have work to do, you know? Hey.
Can't do it all, man. Yeah. You seem to find tough. A way to do anyway.
It's tough.
Andrew Brooks here on the Verb Pod Network. Thank you so much for making some time. Like I said, everyone, if you're not already following Moto Coating Company on Instagram, I highly recommend it. It is visually spectacular. And this has been a great time to talk to you, man. I really appreciate you making some time today.
Yeah, thank you, dude. It's been fun.
Absolutely. Well, do not hang up just yet. But for podcast sake, let's cut things off.
All right, guys, that was a fantastic interview with none other than Andrew Brooks from Moto Coating Company. I can't wait to see what those guys come up with next. They always do amazing work. Now it's time for our second featured interview for this episode of The Power Hour. And that's none other than CEO of Rev3D and Rev3D.com, Jordan Boswell. Jordan Boswell is bringing the technology of 3D printing to the sport of motocross because he's passionate about it. He's a weekend warrior himself who still likes to twist the throttle, and he loves to see the industry improve year over year. Now, here's Jordan Boswell with Rev3D.
And with us on the line from Rev3D, Rev3D.com, none other than Jordan Boswell. Jordan, welcome to the Verb Pod Network.
What's going on, Brad? Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for making some time for me this morning. It's a Friday. We are just counting down the moments to the Daytona Supercross. I won't be there. You unfortunately won't be there, but fortunately we are both here right now to talk about Rev3D rev3d.com. Not only the amazing dirt bike tracks that you build, but also the performance products that Rev3D has been churning out for quite some time. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of what makes Rev3D so special, let's get to know you a little bit. What's so special about Jordan Boswell?
I don't know, man. We'd probably have to ask my wife that question.
Oh, yeah. She did choose you after all.
Yeah, but no, man. I'm just I'm a guy from the moto world. The weekend warrior person. I've grown up racing. You know, chasing the dream and chasing the Rettos and that whole deal. I've been racing still actively racing for about 25 years now. So I guess I consider myself kind of a core weekend warrior and somebody you've probably seen around the track before if you've been anywhere on the East Coast. So,
fair enough. But like many other weekend warriors, you wear your heart on your sleeve and empty your wallet on a weekly basis so that you can continue to enjoy the sport and get your throttle therapy. You and I first met on the starting line at Loretta Lynn's as Carson Milliken prepared to embark onto what was one of the only dry motos of his entire week. It was quite soggy while we were down there. But he had some of your product on his bike. And, so I guess that the question is, like, you've been doing this for almost 25 years. At what point throughout your motocross experience, did you want to start to bring over your love of 3D technology and those materials to the world of motocross and make an impact that way?
Yeah, man, it kind of, so I guess to back it up a little bit, when I got out of the service, I was in the Navy and I got out in 2016. And when I moved back, I lived in Japan or was stationed in Japan the whole time. I started working for a company called GE Additive. So GE Additive does the aerospace, and medical sector, 3D printing. So a lot of metal, titanium, aluminum, very high end, very expensive stuff. I worked there for quite some time and got a lot of exposure while I was still actively racing. And what I guess where it all came to fruition though was during COVID. So we saw like the huge supply chain issues, because of all of the outsourcing. You see a lot of outsourcing overseas and then a lot of layoffs. And how that all kind of came together was, thinking about what the technology offered from an inventory standpoint. So, like, you know, there's some gear companies that are sitting on a lot of product, but with 3D printing, we're really able to utilize this technology of a digital inventory. So, you know, it was kind of an aha moment while everybody was waiting on these containers stuck at a shipping port, as to one, manufacturing here in North America, and then number two, being able to react accordingly to the demand of the, you know, the consumer, of the weekend warriors. What do they need? And how can we stay consistent pricing, you know, not be affected by very long supply chains, and also bring in a technology that is very untouched in this industry, at least for the average consumer, right?
Absolutely. So, like, what was that first product that you sort of had come off your quote-unquote assembly line? And I'm sure that it's evolved immensely from there, because the first thing I think of when I think of a 3D printer is actually probably a pretty small unit. But I also know that they come in some pretty wild sizes, like probably one of the whole size of this entire room.
Oh, yeah. Man, it's so hard to, I guess, put my finger on one product. What? Like once the wheels get turning, you just look at a bike differently. And you look at, I guess, the weekend differently. So not only are we talking about parts on the bike, but, tools to help, you know, help you with maintenance and stuff. So, I'd say initially I was really going for the more performance side of it. So case savers were some of the first products. So I think like when we first launched, the KTM 65 K-Saber was the first one that we launched with. And the reason being that that was the first one was one of the – it's actually a girl, Ava, that we sponsor, had another K-Saber on there and had a chain break. And then we were Actually looking at the mounting holes where the K-Saber mounted it and broke it off. And it was kind of an aha moment there too. Like, oh, there's opportunity, in the K-Saber industry using, you know, carbon fiber. So that was probably our first big, you know, product that we came out with.
So how far has it evolved from, like, I'm sure the first one that came, that you printed, like, do you still have it? Like, you have like almost like, Patient zero? Is it sitting on your desk somewhere?
Now, I have a box of patient zeros. And I think at one point, once we're doing some remodeling here at the shop, and I'm going to make a nice display case of kind of what it started at and what it's become. So it'll be cool.
How it started and how it's going. I love it. So one of my favorite products from you is of all things a funnel, because I myself, you know, I'm a two stroke guy, and yeah. I'm actually looking at getting a 2023 KTM 300. But the problem with that is that when I go and change my oil in my 252 stroke, is I put my funnel into the hole, and then I usually take my Kickstarter and I like pin it against the funnel so that it doesn't fall all over the place while I'm filling it. I don't have a steady hand and just fill the oil from the jug itself. But you've solved that problem.
Yeah. So we dropped the threaded funnel. And really it was just for that reason, right? Either, you know, you got this, little paper funnel that comes for free. And, I also don't have a steady hand. So I end up with half on the floor and then half and, you know, on my hand and then maybe a little bit in the bike.
Right.
So this is like kind of one of those little simple tools that, you know, we looked at and was just like, I think there's a need and it's very cost effective. Right. I mean, we're around a $20, you know, US dollar bill for a funnel and, which also includes free shipping. So, it's not that kind of leads us to, I'm not really in this industry to get rich or anything like that. We see the need for things like this threaded funnel and we just want to, you know, help all the moto, you know, girls and guys out and come up with stuff that can help them. So.
Unreal. And like, so. Well, like all entrepreneurs, like I feel like the biggest commonality between all entrepreneurs is their want and need to solve problems. And you're pretty good at identifying those types of things. And I've even seen some new products rolling out, like hand guards. Those are going to be really interesting. Like, do you find yourself now, like just like at the races, constantly just being like, I could fix that. I could fix that. I could reverse engineer that. What's your thought process there?
Yeah, for sure. And one thing I think, you know, the people that have interfaced with me at the track, will attest to is I'm super approachable. My entire family is. So we actually, like, we tell people to, if you see me and you think of something, like, or if you're having an issue, like, just reach out to me, tap me on the shoulder at the track and let's come up with a solution. A lot of times, you know, when we take our setups to the track, we take a few printers with us too. We've designed stuff at the track and printed stuff, for people at the track that we don't actually offer as a product. So, I think of one example, we had the front brake line, guide on I think it was a KTM 65. Somebody had lost and the line was bouncing off the tire there and printed the little guide and, got it installed before first practice. As much as I want to take credit for, you know, a lot of the ideas or things that I've come up with, you know, seeing, the struggles, I have a lot of people that also reach out to me and say, hey, is this something you think you could do? We're constantly seeing issues with it. Love to see if you can do it. And we usually try and hook those people up too, right? So if they have an idea and it becomes a product, we usually will hook them up with the first one for free and, just as a token of appreciation, I guess.
So I don't want to step on any toes of any type of copyright infringement whatsoever, but if I was looking for a set of hand guards that looked anything like the original a Chirby's handguards that Travis Pastrana used to use back in the day. Chirby's no longer makes them. But if I was looking for something like that, do you know a guy who could make me a set?
Yeah. I think I know a guy. I can get you his phone.
That's awesome. I think I need it. My dream bike, honestly, is a 2000. Well, honestly, I'd probably get like an 05 through 07 252 stroke and then just dress it up as an 01 because it was a much better motorcycle. But an RM250 and just like get that thing just like Travis Pastrana right out, because that was my guy. Even though I got RC over my shoulder here, Pastrana was my guy. He, like, I'm tall and lanky like he is. And he was a Fox guy. I was a Fox guy. Then he's a No Fear guy. No, that stuff looked good too. Who did you look up to growing up?
Oh, I'm like,
you're gonna date when yourself,
when I really got kind of, like, you know, when I got out of being like a kid that was just running around getting in the dirt and stuff at the track, and I was really like watching, like, Bar to Bar 08 was like, that's like my core, like, moto. Like, that was so good. Man, it's kind of crazy. Like, I think Josh Grant had a video back on his Geico days where he did this quad, and probably one of the biggest whips I've ever seen somebody throw. So definitely Josh Grant, Travis Pastrana.
Pipe
sure.
Five?
It might be.
It is.
And then, yeah, like Travis Pastrana, I think, the thing I liked, and it's kind of similar to me with like Travis Pastrana, is he was just like approachable, like nice, versus, and I don't, you know, I know things have changed in a different world, but like the Chad Reeds and Ricky's and James, they were all so like, in the zone and not really, it was kind of hard to relate with them, right? So that's what I think I liked about like Travis Pastrana, how he was kind of, you know, just going with the flow. And I had one of those Travis Pastrana Beanie Babies back when the old Beanie Baby thing was
Big
deal. Some Ernesto
Fonseca.
The McGrath Fonseca
ones, and they had the Pastrana ones. They also had these.
Yeah.
The Road Champs, back in the day, somehow the motocross toys had more detail than they do today. I will not get into that conversation on this
part. Yeah.
But yeah, that's cool. So you're more of a Travis Pastrana guy, more guys who are a little bit more open guys. Like, honestly, like I first met Travis Pastrana at the 2004, Supercross in Minneapolis. It was Davey Millsap's first Supercross ever. Travis wasn't racing, but he was there. Just kind of bopping around, being there for Davey. And he was just signing autographs feverishly. Like anywhere and kids would just follow him around. Like he never got tired of signing. That was my favorite thing about the guy. It's one of the only signatures I have from that event. And I think he probably wrote his name about 1,000 times an hour that day.
Yeah. I think it's, he represents like what everybody initially got into riding dirt bikes for.
Yes.
I think when the guys, when it becomes a job, right, it becomes so serious, and when it's paying your bills. And I think he just did a good job of like just staying to his roots and his core as to why he ever started. You know, maybe he's got a few more rods and pins and screws now, but he always seemed like glass half full guy. And I can appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I'm always a fan of guys who make being a professional motocross racer look like a fun job to have.
For sure.
Like, guys like Aaron Plessinger, guys like Adam Cianciarulo, even though a guy like he's had a lot of injuries, he's had a lot of knock, like kind of setbacks during his career, he seems to still have that same, like, I'm fortunate that I do get to do this for a living, because there's people out there who would like they'd give their left arm to be able to line up for a 450 Supercross. So let's get back to Rev3D, rev3d.com. For those who haven't already gone to the website, feel free to go do that right now. Check out everything you guys have to offer. Let's talk about some proud moments of yours as someone who's building products and solving problems for people. Can you tell me a story of a time when you were able to develop a product for someone, it really worked, and they kind of gave you that sort of aha moment when you were able to fix that for someone? That's a rewarding feeling.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of them come, like me being a moto dad myself, right? I have a 5-year-old that races. A really cool product that I think has helped a lot and has done very well is the oil tank bracket on the KTM 50 Minis. So
okay.
The reason being is you may or may not know, but being a mini parent, it's very expensive, right? Even with your own riding itself. But so there's an issue with these brackets. They break. But the thing is that you can only get OEM ones other than us. But you have to buy like a complete assembly, which includes an oil tank, and it's almost $200. So you get a bunch of parts that you don't actually need with it just to get this single bracket. Okay. So we've made the a bracket for this oil tank for $40, U.S. dollars, that is. And, we've sold a bunch of them. It helps get kids back on the track. And, people can stock up on them rather than having to, go spend $1,000 to stock up on probably a $20 piece of scrap aluminum that the OEM ones are. So that one's been rewarding because, at the end, we just want to keep kids on the track and things like that really, make it worth it. So
fair enough. That's super rewarding. And I'm a big fan of that as well, because when you can create a solution for someone that not only fixes their problem, but also allows them, like say that they would have spent that $200 on that replacement, assembly. Well, now they have $160 to put towards travel, track fees, maybe a private lesson. Like,
right.
You didn't just save them $160. You just shaved a half second, 2 seconds off their lap time by letting them meet up with their local pro. And then you also helped out that local pro by giving them some business on having a new client. So like those are the types of things that really start to sort of help the industry grow and continue to flourish. Obviously when any type of new technology rolls in, much like people throw stones at electric bikes, I'm sure there's a fair bit of people in the comment sections on social media that might social media is a great place to throw stones. People a little bit skeptical of a new technology rolling in. Maybe they don't understand it. Maybe they just don't believe in the product, or not maybe the product itself, but just the technology behind it. They're just skeptical, right? How do you sort of quash that for people and help them believe?
So there's a variety of people that we see on social media, right? So each one, gets approached differently. But what we're really trying to do and what we've been doing over the last year is really just teach, right? We come from a very high end part of this manufacturing method of 3D printing or additive manufacturing. So we know what's capable. But most people that don't have experience in that area have only experience with more of like the hobby shop, like printers. So they're immediately going to refer to what they know. So just teaching them, rather than, being super reactive and defensive to any skepticism or negative comments, we try to just respond with, as much information as we can to maybe teach them more that they don't know. Like a big one for us is about the K-Savers. So a lot of people, they only think about machined aluminum K-Savers. And that's all they know. So when they think about ours, they're automatically thinking plastic, but not, I guess, learning enough about it before making the comments. I think that's probably just that's an issue across the board. A lot of people will say stuff without ever doing like much research. So with the K-Savers, a lot of times what, we always go back to is like, we're not designing this K-Saver to survive the chain break. We're designing it so that your case survives the chain break. That's what it's there for.
Right.
So if our case saver, breaks because of it, it's done its job as long as that case is still good. And, we've seen multiple instances just, we shared one recently on our Instagram, but there's been plenty more. We just happen to have a picture of that one. So, just teaching and that's all we can do. Negatively reacting is, it doesn't do us any favor. So we just try and teach as much as we can. And then some people will be receptive and some won't. So we just try and stay even keeled. So
I love it. You have to stay that way in 2024 in the world of social media. Now, it's not all saving cases and smiley faces over there. You guys work hard and you play hard. And by that, I mean, you've got some of, and I wish I was like, 10, 12 years old again so that I could break out all of my like little toy dirt bikes and stuff. Because, I want to rip one of these things on a Rev 3D motocross track. I actually, if like people can't see this if they're watching the listen to the auto version, but I actually have a 95 ATM custom one that a friend of mine made for me. You make motocross tracks for toy dirt bikes. That's super cool, and I'm sure more popular than you wanted it to be.
It did get a bit crazy, and I think dropping them right before Christmas didn't help with that.
Interesting move, yes.
Yes, very interesting move. We did it, and we wanted it to be a little bit different, right? And very, again, cost efficient. A lot of the current ones out there are kind of big and bulky, and which they're fun and they're cool, and I know the kids love them. They just take up a lot of space, and being a parent myself, it's nice to pack stuff away every now and again and just get it out of my way. So that was one cool part. And one thing we were after was we wanted it to be able to, fit in a drawstring bag that comes with the track, a Rev 3D bag. But we also made it to where they didn't connect. So we wanted the kids to use their imagination, right? This is like the pinnacle of using your imagination, just like when you're at the track and the kids are in a dirt pile and they're just making the little tracks. Same thing. We wanted them to rearrange it as they saw fit and build a big quad and or do a fully connecting track. Or if they're, outdoor started and they wanted to incorporate it in their dirt track out in the pits, then we wanted them to be able to do that. So all that and being, under that $100 mark to, be cost efficient for these parents. Like we already said, the moto is not cheap. So we're just trying to make sure that, we take care of our moto fam.
You must be like perpetually out of stock on that. It's as soon as those are available, people are just buying them up. Cause like whether it's in the rec room or at the track, like families need something to kind of keep the youngsters sort of occupied and keep their mind on moto. And that's a perfect way to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It was definitely a bit crazier, before Christmas. It's, I'd say plateaued a little bit now, but, before Christmas, it was, I think we were selling out in 2 to 3 minutes every time we'd post them. So, it was a crazy, crazy couple months. And, the sad thing is that as any business owner would know, my kids end up with like all the scrap pieces and then everybody else ends up with like the full track. So that's how it goes though. They're our testers. So.
No doubt. And like, not only do you have like jumps and turns and whatnot, you have a functioning start gate, which I thought was super neat. How did you come up with that? Like, is there a CAD drawing that you're knocking this off of or what?
No, man. I was just sitting there messing around trying to figure out, how do we stay different and then like really make it, something that the kids can relate to and get their buddies and just sitting there, man. Once you design stuff and you have no restraints on your design, the wheels get turning. So I'm like a modern day Pablo Picasso, man.
Well, fair enough. Well, don't cut off your ear just yet, because then you won't hear me ask my next question. So what is next for Rev 3D? How does this evolve? How does this continue to solve problems? And where do we go from here?
It's getting big for sure. So, we spent the first year really trying to teach technology, and we're going to continue to do that through this year. But we're trying to, grow, right? So that's happening in a couple ways. We're teaming up with a couple amateur type teams. And then we're going to be working with some other of those teams or dynos and engine shops and help develop parts with them, to, help the performance of bikes. And then also, we will be getting into metal 3D printing. So that's probably our next big thing coming. Obviously, there's so many bikes, brands, model sizes. We'll always be dropping new parts and everything, in our current, our current materials, but metal's the next big thing. So we're talking engine mounts, foot pegs, things of that nature. So that'll be, you know, we can 3D print in titanium, aluminum, steel. You can even do copper now. It's
really?
Yeah. So it's getting pretty crazy. So we're just trying to make sure that we maintain that affordability, right? Metal 3D printing is more expensive, and that's from the material cost. It's not as readily available to the average consumer. So that's what kind of drives the prices a little bit more on that. So we're just trying to make sure before we release the metal 3D printed parts that it's still, you know, cost efficient and competitive with the industry and a solution, right? Not just a nice to have, but a need to have, I guess.
Fair enough. One of the last questions I have for you is what's a product that that surprised you how well it sold aside from the toy dirt bike?
Yeah. Man, there's a vent on the back of the E3s and the E5s, e-bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a regular, you know, combustion bike, the exhaust plug for when you're washing it. So they actually have a vent on the back of it. And we made a vent cap for it, that people would put on when they're washing their e-bikes, and those were crazy. Just it, you know, something that just took a, you know, 20, 30 minutes to design and prototype and test. And, those went very fast. It was just, it's the random things typically that you just come up with that, end up going crazy, and the ones that you think are going to go crazy usually don't. So
fair enough. And then so my last one I have for you is who are the current riders that you have sort of under contract? I know you help some amateurs. That's a near and dear thing to your heart to help out the grassroots of the sport.
Yeah, so this year we did a tier one kind of elite program. So we have a few of them actually down at RCSX. They'll be racing on Sunday and Monday. So you got Noah Sherman. Definitely everybody needs to keep an eye out for him. It's a kid that kind of just showed up from the woods of Kentucky, and I don't know if I've seen somebody throw a bigger whips at 14 years old on a 250, but yeah. So he'll be in 250B. And then we have some local kids. Got Riley Owens, Wesley Minery. We got the Frazee kids. And then we also got some guys up north of the border that we're hooking up there in Canada. We are working with some other teams though too. So, we've been, working out some final details with the EBR Yamaha team. So we're trying to get that all locked in with Josh down there at EBR. And, that's going to be exciting. He's got some serious talent down there. And then, you know, we've been sneaking in a few of these factory teams, even, you know, some of them north of the border. So, you know, if we have what they need, they let us know. So we're working out all those deals, but you know, it all starts with the grassroots and the kids back here at home. So
love it. Well, I would love to see a Rev 3D case saver on a JDR, Honda at some point. Maybe that'll happen or possibly a Walton Kawasaki.
Yeah. May already be on there. Who knows?
Who knows? We don't know. We have to make it maybe look a little bit closer next time the series rolls through town. Someone's got to make a call over to the Triple Crown series. They still have the third round in Pilot Mound listed as an Alberta round, which that track is very much in Manitoba. Awesome, man. This has been so much fun. Tell me a little bit about before I let you go, tell me a little bit about rev3d.com. What people will find there, how they can navigate the site, and if they have any questions, how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, for sure. So we're constantly adjusting the site based as our catalog grows. But once you get to the homepage, you'll see parts tab. Typically, that's bolt-on stuff or things, you know, brand specific. So you'll see a drop down. You can pick your brand. So, you know, KTM, Cowie, Yamaha, whatever it is. Haven't got our hands on a Triumph yet. We'll work on that. So, you know, give us some time.
They'll be in dealers in like a week. So,
yeah. So, and then, tools tab, you'll have a lot of those funnels that we were talking about, the good old funnel buddy that you put your threaded funnel in, you know, some greasers, you know, any of the tools are on there. The toys tab, that's where to find those sick tracks where you can, you know, ride like you think you can in your head, and then, you know, get that all out and then go out on the track and, you know, ride like we do in real life. And then, yeah, if you want to reach out, that we also have a request a part tab. So if you don't see something on the site and you have an idea and you want to get a hold of me or anybody else here at Rev3D, you use that and it'll get over our way. Or, you know, you can also reach out on socials, and we love to hear from everybody, their ideas, and you know, we're always receptive. So
that's awesome. Yeah, no, I know for a fact that not a single time have I ever direct messaged Rev3D and they haven't immediately responded, and it's usually you. So yeah. That's pretty solid. Yeah. Not too many brands that are like that. I hope that continues. Jordan, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for making time for the Verb Pod Network.
Thanks, Brad. I appreciate it, and looking forward to the future.
Absolutely, my friend. You do not hang up just yet, but for podcast sake, we're going to hang things up right there.
And that'll just about do it for this episode of the Power Hour. Yes, I do understand that we're coming up on the 2.5 hour mark for this particular podcast, and hope that you enjoyed it. I understand that if your name happens to be Sean Wedge, you're probably scratching your head as to why, given the fact that you requested that most of these podcasts be around an hour so that you can spend time on the elliptical without having to interrupt with yourself whatsoever or change a channel. But this one, yes, well over the 1 hour mark, but I think this one will stand for itself. This is a really interesting interesting podcast as far as I'm concerned. I really like kind of going through things with Zach Heron. The guy is an absolute superstar on the microphone. And then to be able to bring in guys like Jordan Boswell and Andrew Brooks from Moto Coding Company, well, that makes my day, because that's allowing Verb Moto to shed light on some really special individuals who are doing amazing things within the industry. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that and got a little bit out of there. So support the companies that support Verb Moto. And as always, thank you for listening.